يورلوس يجول بتاع لغلان نقول ما زال
مين از ده؟
توك جو تشابز انا بقول له توران زميتي
يا ام لوكيتنج
بليز
اي اندر
مستر مايلان
Ayanda, in the absence of the chairperson, it's normal protocol to appoint an acting chairperson. Can we proceed with that?
That's what we're trying to do, Mr. Milam. I will start the process.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Milam, can I be appointed to chair the committee?
Sorry, Minister, no, you can't.
Why not? Why not?
Because you account to the committee, Minister.
Just chair the meeting. In the absence of the chair, that's the chairman.
Good morning, members. Once more, chair. Can you hear us, Mr. Luzipo?
Ayanda's chair was in now and then he went out again. Seems the system is kicking him out every time. Oh, there he's in now again.
Chair, can you proceed? I think chairperson is experiencing some problem. Chairperson, can you hear us?
I give up now.
Chairperson, you're in the meeting. Can you proceed? We can hear you. Yes.
I'm battling. Okay, yes.
You are bewitched.
Yeah, I think so. Someone,
Commissar.
You'll bear with me. I'm using the phone now because the iPad, laptop, all of them don't want to work. But I'll keep on trying with with time. I see we are almost. Enough for a hall. Let me welcome the honorable members, the staff of the committee, the department and the entities that we are dealing with today. Are there any apologies? Let me be quick.
Yes, Chair. I received the following apologies, Mr. Zungula, Mr. Jafta, and the Deputy Minister, Dr. Ngabane. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Being the case as it may, honorable members who are dealing with the two entities, that is NEXA and SEF, without any further delays, we will deal with NEXA. And NEXA, because of my time that I have taken, you will take us up until quarter past 10. And then there will be questions of clarity. Can I give it to you? I didn't see whether the minister will pay if he's here or the DG from the department. Let me give them first and then, okay, then when the presentation must be done by 20 past 10. Is the minister in? If not,
yes,
is
the DG?
Yes, I've been here. Anything
recording
now.
In progress.
It loves to be late. Okay, can I give it to the honorable minister?
I was not
there. And I give it to the honorable minister.
The person of the committee, Baba Luzipho, the whip of the committee, Omar Mashaule, members of the committee, all of you, chairpersons and CEOs of the various entities present here today, Team DM.
Recording in progress.
We're presenting two entities, NEXA and SEF. I want to submit my apologies that at least by 12, may I please be released, because there's a complicated traveling arrangement to Cape Town because the budget tomorrow, but I will be here until 12. I will introduce both entities and then give them space to present the DG is present. You see, governance in Nexa has been normalized. And it is hard at work. It is turning the organization around. It is forward-looking. I'm sure when they talk about their presentation, they will talk about Safari and the multi-purpose gadget that they are putting in place. Governance is strengthened. We've appointed a CEO, Lotso Chabashe. He's hands-on. He is looking into all problems that have been confronting there. The executives that were there are all appointed because when an organization have a lot of vacancies, without even analyzing the performance, it is suboptimal. And they are working hard to reposition the organization. That is Nexa. SERF is also working very hard as a group. The board is in place, governance is working well. Petro SA is our problem child. We're working on it. One of the issues that we have taken a decision, we're quite resolute about it, is that there are quite a number of vultures who are flying all over there trying to get Petro SA. And we're resolute that Petro SA is not going to be sold to anybody, even if they show us a lot of money that want to buy it on this amount. It is a very important asset of the state. There have been many problems there. A number of people have been disciplined. Others have left. Others are being fired. It's quite a difficult entity. We have resolved to merge Petro SA with SFF and ICAS and form the National Petroleum Company. That project is still on the track. It's going slower than we expected, but there is a lot of work going in. They will talk to it in the strategy. And you know that there was the issue of the strategic stock in Saldanha, which was a major, major issue where strategic stock was sold. Today, we can confidently say illegally. We've got that stock back. It's in the control of the state again. And that is one of the things that we've done. And I'm sure in the presentation, staff will delve into those things. Basically, Chairperson, I'm just giving you some of the issues that always receive attention in many of the cases. Many people, you have a sense that they think you should fail in getting this thing right. And the determination in the team is that we are not going to fail. We're going to succeed. We're going to make SERF work. We're going to make Nexa work. The last area that will need a lot of attention is the AE, the African Exploration. It's a mining company, very small to be even regarded as a mining company. We need to turn it around, grow it, have it competitive and big. That work is on our desk to look at, but we are hard at work. Thank you very much. Nexa is first, then SERF. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Minister. I might start, Chairperson.
Continue.
Thank you. Okay.
David.
Thank you for Honourable Chair. Thank you, Honourable Minister. Thank
David,
you, Honourable Members.
You are
yes, sir.
You are under my control. I said next first. Come, David.
I'm on, sir. I'm on, sir. Okay. Let's just. I'm going to start with one slide and a couple of comments to go with the slide, and then I'll pass it across to the CEO, Luis Tabashi. And as the minister mentioned, since the appointment, now there's now been 2 years since we were appointed, the board has focused on turning the organization's performance around and stabilizing into the future. And I will, the governance has been strengthened, and I'll come back in a second. We've appointed a group CEO, Luis Tabashi. And I will comment in a moment that we have present in this meeting Advocate Chowan, who is the chair of our ARC. We have, Ms. Luis Tabashi, group CEO. We have Precious Hawadi, the chief financial officer. And we have the managing directors of both the main subsidiaries, that being NTP and Pelchem. And it's just worth noting in terms of the structuring, of the executives here today, each of those positions has been repositioned and has a new person in charge of it since a year ago. So we have done a significant restructuring, and that's the next comment, that the top tier structure is fully capacitated and for all executives by the end of March. There's a couple of the ones we're still going and acting. And the next board is to direct the executive team to reposition the organization for better outcomes to improve the strategy. I want to make a couple of comments before we move on from my perspective, and I'm going to leave most of the talking to Luiso and probably Precious. I think it's important to understand that when the board was put in place 2 years ago by the minister, we were inheriting a governance challenge, to put it gently. The board, as we all know, was completely replaced, or whatever was left, it was completely replaced. We had an acting CEO, and we had a financial situation that was deemed to be such that we were doubting we could pay salaries until the end of March of 2020. I would just comment that we've had 2 years since then. We've started by restructuring the board approach. We've then worked down to the CEO, had to resolve the previous CEO's CCMA case, and so on down the organization. But despite COVID-19, which put a very large hole in our finances over the last 2 years, we have managed to continue the function of the organization, and we've not entered a situation where salaries cannot be met, which was the concern we had 2 years ago. And I also mentioned that we've actually done that with the support of the unions. So we've, I think, got a good relationship with Nahawu and the Palindabu Workers Union. And that appears to be going well, and they're fully involved in this. CEO will mention it later on. We're fully involved them in the restructuring process that's going on. The other comment to make before we start this presentation properly is that we are presenting against the plan of 2021-2022. And you will see numbers projected in the future which show us continuing with the loss and turning the company around in around 2027. The revised plan, or the plan for 2022-2023 onwards, which is due for submission the end of this month to the to the ministry, will in fact show that we expect next year to have quite a minor loss of in the order of 20 million rand, and to break even and make profit thereafter, which is significant improvement on the what was projected a year ago as our way forward. So with those brief opening comments, I'll hand over to Mr. Tabashi, and he can carry on with the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee, honorable members, honorable minister, honorable DG, chairpersons of NEXA and CEF, fellow CEOs and colleagues, good morning. Today I'll be taking you through the the corporate plan for the current financial year and the next two. This was submitted, obviously, around this time last year. And time has elapsed since it has been submitted, and I think we're just reporting right at the tail end of the financial year. The key issues that we need to talk about that I'll be highlighting is the mandate and the strategic drivers. We'll talk about this group structure as we had it until the quarter three of this current financial year. The corporate plan itself, in terms of what it aims to achieve, and the summary of performance and the financial performance. And to touch on what the Honorable Minister raised and the Chairperson raised around the rationalization of the group and where we are in terms of our forward-looking approach. And then I will conclude. At the outset, it has always been important that we go back in terms of, as a creature of statute, what actually is our founding mandate? What are we set out to do? What do we ought to be versus what we are? And it's crucial to state that we are a creature of statute as a result of the Nuclear Energy Act 46 of 1999, where the primary mandate is to undertake and promote research and development in the field of nuclear energy and radiation sciences and technology, and make that available for general use. Also to procure source material and utilize it and beneficiate it accordingly, and cooperate with any other person or institution in matters falling within these functions. Then the Act also goes into the second mandate, which talks about a whole lot of things, one of them being the operation of SAFARI for the benefit of the country, the decommissioning and management of waste as it relates to the previous nuclear programs, other international obligations that the government has got, as well as exploiting, for the lack of a better word, the IP that we generate for the benefit of the country. But also it's important to state that ancillary to that, the Nuclear Energy Policy of 2008, which re-emphasizes the position of NEXA. It talks about NEXA being the anchor for energy, nuclear energy research, development, and innovation. It talks about the same thing as the source material, beneficiation and capabilities, especially uranium, because the nuclear reactor value chain talks to uranium as a nuclear, as an energy source. Also, it talks to development of nuclear fuel fabrication capabilities. And this is the capability that NEXA used to have and supplied to Quebec at some point, until the point it was deemed that it was uneconomical to do so. But it was an effort to review that approach and see what we can do in that nuclear fuel fabrication chain. Also in support of this, it's also important to look into the fact that, as we all know, nuclear plays in the international space. And this talks to the fact that the International Atomic Energy Agency, as an agency of the United Nations, always looks at us. And it's important to always go back and check on the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. And those that matter to our endeavor as NEXA are the goal three, which is good health and well-being. And that is really where MTP as our substitute plays in terms of providing medication for cancer detection and therapy. Goal seven, affordable and clean energy. We have a part of the organization that is focusing on the clean energy aspect, and our mandate being nuclear, we'll have to always look at nuclear energy as a source. The other one is goal eight, which is decent work and economic growth. We really are driving our efforts to ensure that we provide meaningful work for our employees, and also grow the economy of the country by ensuring that we contribute positively and also making ourselves sustainable as an organization into the future. Goal nine talks to industry, innovation, and infrastructure. That falls smack bang in the middle of our innovation endeavor as a nuclear energy research institution, and also the infrastructure that assists us in that regard, and that we talk to the likes of SAFARI and the multiple purpose reactor that is coming. And climate action also talks to that clean energy aspect of goal 7 and goal 13. So all of these we look at because as we go and present and discuss in international platforms, especially those that we are fully recognized in, these become the fundamental anchor or the fundamental. Considered various other documents that drive us in the form of the national strategic plans, the form of the IRP 2019, the DMRE strategic plan, the economy. So that's our mandate. And as we all know, that mandate follows the structure. This is the structure that we inherited, which was applicable until September this year, this financial year. It's a very bloated structure, and we realize that as a means of moving forward, where we draw efficiencies and effectiveness, we needed to really relook at this in line with this revised strategy that I will talk about later on. So this was the structure as it was when we submitted the corporate plan in February last year. However, it has subsequently changed, as you will see in the upcoming slides. Because in this structure, there were lots of duplication of activities, but I think we have sought out to eliminate all of that. The corporate plan is submitted comprises four programs: the commercial program, growth initiatives, infrastructure programs, compliance, and support programs. If we talk about the compliance, the commercial programs, we talk here about the nuclear medicine, which is really the area where NTP plays, the fluorochemicals, which is where Pelchem plays, nuclear and industrial manufacturing, and this is an area where we had an entity which has been loss-making called Pelindaba Enterprises, which have disbanded on the new structure and sought efforts to actually run the business differently as we participate in the manufacturing, in industrial manufacturing aspect of our business. I will talk about it in the future slides. Then the growth initiative talks about the research and development, which is one of the key things that we need to be doing because that's a primary function in the Act that found us. And then it talks about stage one decommissioning, decontamination and decommissioning, DND for short. And this talks to looking at the old and disused facilities in our present. Then the multiple purpose reactor, as it was highlighted earlier on, forms part of the infrastructure program because as we move forward and seek to improve our infrastructure into the horizon, it is crucial that we look at our sustainability into the future because these facilities have to safely outlive our careers and our lives as we have inherited them. Then we've got the compliance and support programs wherein we focus on safety, which is fundamental in the nuclear business, as well as the human capital. As I move into the performance up to the end of quarter three for this financial year, the performance is not particularly looking good. There are quite a couple of programs. In total, we have 24 programs. And of these 24 programs, if you look at the four sub-programs, 24 KPIs, and of these KPIs, they are morphed off the actual programs that I've just highlighted in the previous slide, where the commercial program has got 13, and we've achieved 5 of those, and we're busy driving to get to the other 8 that we have not achieved at the end of December. The growth initiatives, we had 5, we have 5 KPIs, and we achieved 3. And let me just say, in global sense, we are recovering the targets that we have not made by the end of December, and we are looking very good that we have even formed specific task teams to focus on those that seemed impossible, and the teams are working flat out to recover those particular actions. Let me also state that part of the focus has been on rationalizing the business, and that's one of the efforts that I must say has not really been part of the corporate plan as it was submitted in February, but has been one of the key activities in the course of the financial year because we could not continue in the same corporate plan vein whilst the organization was changing direction in its focus. And I must state that the two important programs that the Honorable Minister raised, which talks to Safari being operated quite well and being amongst the global top performers forms part of that commercial program, and it's one of the achieved targets. And the MPR forms part of the infrastructure program. And at this point in time, I'd like to just look at the financial performance, wherein I'll hand over to Precious, who's our CFO. Over to you, Precious. Precious, are you there? You are muted, man. Precious, you are muted. Please come through. Okay. It looks like she's got network challenges, but I can cover this slide.
Good morning, Chairperson, honorable members, honorable DG, members of the committee. Good morning, Chairperson, members of the committee.
Can hear you, Precious, you can go ahead. Okay, I think the technical glitches, I will take over and just run through the finances as they show. Maybe Precious can come again once I finish the slides to see if your system is better. As the chairperson highlighted, is that when we looked at the corporate plan, when we submitted the corporate plan in February 2021 for the 2022 financial year, we had set out, we projected a loss of 194 million for the current financial year. But at this point in time, as it looks, we are headed for much lower than that. And also, as the chairperson alluded, that we're running at a loss until 2025, financial year 2025, and with the recovery only showing in financial year 2026 being in a positive. However, The board has been very instrumental in driving the executives to look into a mechanism of ensuring that this change, the turnaround of the organization happens rather quickly. And I think the executive team that I lead has really been up to the task in that what is showing now, our current plan is that, as the chairperson alluded, the financial year 2023 should be the only year that we make a slight loss. And that is what we are pushing, but I'm also pushing for the team to get to break-even point and go from financial year 2024 positive all the way. So as the picture was submitted in February last year, I think we've moved forward quite substantially to change this picture and ensure that we are moving in the right direction. And I must say that it's been quite a fruitful journey. Because we've worked hand in hand with the unions, other stakeholders, and it must be also important to state that as we present such plans, we had investors in our midst last week, and when we shared with them our strategic direction and intent, they were actually quite positive to say, look, we can understand that Nexa has turned the corner and is moving in the right direction. Precious, I don't know if you can try once again if you want to say something.
Thank you, CEO, and good morning to the honourable members and the honourable minister and the committee at large. So to add to what the GCEO had indicated, if we look at where we are projected to go going forward, and as mentioned by the chair of the committee, if we look at 2022-23, the picture we envisage is going to be a similar position to almost breaking even. So our numbers are looking at a negative 23. A million. However, from 23-24 onwards, we project that as a group, the Nexa group, we will be having profits of 87 million. For 24-25, we'll be having 107 million. And 25-26, we'll have 155 million. That is the net profit as we envisage going forward. Where our focus has been is also on strengthening the balance sheet. because we are currently in a situation where we are a going concern. We are a month away from the end of the financial year. And one thing which is positive is that we have been able to achieve these positive results by being very mindful in terms of our expenditure. The MTF projects that we have been focusing on have also started to yield some very positive projections. And if we look at the planned investments in the various subsidiaries and the sustainability plans, those also show a positive trajectory. So when we start tracking where we are and also focusing on resolving issues with the auditors, it has been quite a good journey. So we have made quite a lot of progress in that regard. So I'll hand back over to the GCEO to take the committee through the rest of the presentation. Thank you.
After that financial picture and the path that we've highlighted as the path ahead in terms of what we have done to improve the situation, it is important that we talk about the rationalization of the group, that of the issues that we found, because it was important that as we move into rationalizing the organization, we look at the ills and understand the root causes of the problems that were existing, especially at the time. And the key issues that we found issues that are related to leadership. Also, the instability related to leadership did not do the organization any good. The organizational culture needed to improve in as much as the culture does satisfy the minimum requirements of the nuclear regulator and the International Atomic Energy Agency. But we can, it's a culture that needed a little bit of an improvement going forward. The governance framework, as it has been evidenced by some of the issues raised by the Auditor General and other audits and reviews, governance needed to improve. Plant and infrastructure performance was not optimal because of the aging infrastructure, where in some of the aging management programs needed to be improved and enhanced so that as a nuclear company running nuclear equipment or nuclear-related equipment, we ensure that the equipment remains with high reliability as it designed. So that was one of the issues that needed a bit of more focus. Then the financial stability and the business model talk together the cost control, in that the business models were actually not very clear for each of the units in terms of, and I put the business model simply as how do you make money as an organization. There are multiple ways of making money in NASA. The form of grants, which is directed to a few activities like research and D&D. There is also commercially facing entities which need to be profitable in their own right without surrogating to any of the other funds. And that needed to be made clear because we found that some of the organizations were unclear about their business model. And also we've got the cost centers within the organizations, which our support organizations are not market facing and they derive their revenue from within, whereby they must, we insisted that they must actually derive value for the entities that are bringing money into the organization. So that streamlining of those organizations became very important going forward. And that was probably one of the starting points in that what business model are we into? And then you design the structure accordingly. So with the rationalization process, we aimed to develop a new sustainable strategy. This has been done. It was actually approved by the board end of August last year. And when the Honorable Minister visited us on site on the 3rd of September, we had the luxury of sharing it with him at a very, very high level. And this was submitted to the department subsequent to that. Developing a new business model, operational model and structure, these have also been completed both in August and September last year. Hence now I'll talk about the structure in the subsequent slides that we have capacitated. Achieve reduced cost structure, that we are on our way. On this one, we can never say we've arrived, but we're already seeing some gains and traction based on what the CFO was talking about earlier on. Increasing revenues. This has started and it has started in earnest, and we see that there is a lot of potential for this organization. because it is a well-recognized organization internationally and locally, and we need to make sure that we increase our footprint in the markets that we should be occupying. And the increasing of the synergies and efficiencies, sorry, I jumped at a bullet point, and that was really one of the key issues, and it talks to the operational models that we had to derive for this organization, in that there was quite a bit of duplication in some areas, and we were resolved to eliminate those duplications, increasing synergies where applicable. And as a matter of fact, we came to a point where, in as part of our structure, we had three fundamental elements in the structure that we'll talk about, where some part of the organizations are centralized because we found value in that. For an organization of our size, it was prudent that we pull all the resources that we have and put them at the center. Some areas we said it's center-led, which means the policy and the resources are located at the center, but operation is distributed by allocating individuals, more like your human resource function. And some of them were decentralized because where it matters and you need to be operationally agile, you have to decentralize the operation so that decision-making is very swift. And we've done that and we've achieved that, as it will be seen shortly. And the last bullet is on improved governance. And that goes without saying that for us to be investment grade as an organization and to be sustainable into the future, the governance has to improve. We are well on our steps of improving governance. We are finding, as we move along, issues wherein we find documents that are conflicting, and we are resolving them as we go along. But in some areas, we're doing a fundamental overhaul. The issue of conflicting documents, for example, we find it in, I'll make an example, wherein the delegation of authority says one thing in terms of what the authority of the CEO to appoint, certain skills. However, you find that there is something that resides either in the shareholder compact or in the terms of reference for another committee. And what we need to do now is to pull that together and make sure that there is no ambiguity in that delegation of each and every individual is clear in the delegation of authority document, does not lie in many other documents. Or that document, then the DOA becomes the driver for the delegation. As we moved on with the rationalization, we developed a strategic framework because it was important to develop a strategy with the entire team bottom up. And I usually say this is a strategy in a page, wherein a person who's doing in the cleaning at Nexa can understand this picture, similarly all the way to the board level and any other stakeholder for that matter, understand this fundamentally, in that we are creating a financially sustainable organization with efficient operations and good governance. That is our flagship that we aspire to have as we move forward. But we realized that we also needed to look at other things, review the mandate, as I've set out in the beginning of the slide pack, that we needed to look at the mandate, review exactly, are we doing what we have to do or what we have been set out to do? And that mandate has been had to be clear and be part of the strategic framework. We improved our vision that we need to be a global leader. We aspire to be a global leader in the nuclear and related technologies, positively touching people's lives socioeconomically. This nuclear business should not be just a research for the sake of research. It must be a research that is geared towards improving people's lives. And then in terms of the mission, developing and safely utilizing nuclear and related technology for commercial and non-commercial use in an environmentally responsible manner. And it is very crucial that as you talk nuclear, safety, environment, and socioeconomics become very important as a starting point. We also found that our values back then, we had about eight or nine values, and it was very clear that you cannot have an organization where you have nine values, because anyone in the organization, once you go past five items, you've forgotten it all. So we workshopped this with the unions and with the staff, and we came up with a handful of values, where in excellence, accountability, safety first, integrity, and innovation become our values, and it becomes the Nexa way. And we've put an acronym that is easy, because as we set out to move forward, we We want an approach that is easily digestible by anyone, easy uptake, and an easy implementation of this. And our leadership programs are being developed in line with this, and we talk about a value-based leadership framework. Then, really, the essence of our strategy, revised strategy, is around financial recovery and sustainability. It also talks about research and innovation, which is our founding aspects of the Act, and then the profitable commercial enterprises, and the key word there being profitable, because these enterprises have been set out to make sure that we leverage our research and commercialize it and derive value for it out in the market space. So their fundamental outset should be profitability. Business continuity and efficiency. This has been important because it talks to all those governance-related aspects of the business and that we need to improve, and we'll be having clear action plans in our corporate plans and in our operational plans as we move forward, because governance drives everything. And the other aspect talks to how we've restructured our organization to make sure that we have got effective and efficient operations. Having said all of that, talent excellence and high-performance culture become an important aspect because we need to keep on nurturing the human capital that you have in our hands, because human capital drives everything. You can have all these four pillars of the strategy, but if you do not have a sound and competent talent, you will not be able to move forward. Even more important in our business, the nuclear business, in that the transformation in that regard becomes very important. So we need to see how we transfer the skill from the old, soon to retire, to the young that is upcoming and into the organization. And in the old cliche of structure follows strategy, once we had developed our strategic framework, and this framework was approved at first by the board in April, and between April and August, when the board approved the strategy, we worked on the structure because we could not have the structure before we had the strategic framework approved. And as it is shown, obviously, the minister and the board right at the top, the group CEO, and we followed the world best practice of having company secretary reporting to the board, as well as what we call integrated assurance. It combines audit and risk. In some entities, it is called combined assurance, and we've called it integrated risk. This is the way to go, wherein that part of the business reports to the board, because the information must get to the board unfiltered. And those two parts of the organization report to me administratively for day-to-day operations. Then we have the office of the CEO, which is really an office that is meant to make sure that the operation, the organization functions quite well and is projected quite well out there into the world, as well as internally. And then the key line functions. We've got 8 line functions, which is finance, where the CFO resides, the human capital, strategy and business enablement, operations and advanced manufacturing. And that operation advanced manufacturing, that's really where we have safari operations taking place. And that's where the skill for getting the new multipurpose reactor to replace safari is residing. And then we've got research and innovation. And these people carry on fundamental research and they commercialize the research to make sure that they supply that IP to the rest of the organization. Then we have the nuclear radioisotopes, wherein the subsidiary NTP is housed. We've got the chemicals, wherein Pelchem is housed. And we have now what is called power and industry, having dismantled Pelindaba Enterprises. And this is going to be an organization that drives our footprint into the market space. We are already manufacturing components for Quebec, for example, the cooling pipework that is currently being installed in the outage at Quebec. As we speak. However, we do more than just what is needed for a nuclear plant, and this organization is going to be industry focused to conventional industry, to the nuclear industry, and ensure that we can use our facilities to the best that we can and derive as best revenue that we can. As I highlighted, out of these positions, we all have been filled Only four that are currently being in the process of being filled. I must say that the target is to ensure that by the end of the financial year, this financial year, which is in 2 months' time, end of March, we aspire to have filled everything. So those four will be filled. So we are moving in the direction of stability. We've got the new leadership that's on board, and it's a good mix. It's got a good gender diversity, good balance of the old and the new in terms of the organizational knowledge. And that was also important as we move forward, because you need to ensure that there is momentum in what you are creating and building. And this is the leadership team that I'm confident will drive Nexa out of the current situation that it finds it had found itself in, because I want to believe that we have already turned the corner and all we just need to do now is to raise our head and keep going forward. So Labour and the executives have been fully involved in crafting the new lower level structures. In actual fact, even at the high level structures, we had Labour discussions with Labour extensively for them to understand the rationale of where we're coming from. And also we had to understand what Labour was raising as their fundamental concerns, because they have their interests at heart. And I must say, we're dealing with very mature teams in both Nehau and Pelindaba Workers Union. And right now we are driving to implement the lower level structures to make sure that come the 1st of April, we can move 100% with the new structure, as we had started this transition of implementing this new structure from the top level. And the key outcome, and I must say that this is embraced by everyone, including MTP, Pelchem, and what used to be Pelindaba Enterprises, is that we are driving to have an efficient and an effective and an efficient organization, which optimizes the use of the resources by centralizing, center leading, and decentralizing where appropriate. And that is really how we've arrived at this. As a way forward and as a conclusion, I'd like to say that the Nexa Group mandate is clearly outlined in the Nuclear Energy Act 46 of 1999, and it is rooted on stabilizing and growing the, and the strategy is rooted in stabilizing and growing the business out of its mandate and leveraging its core competencies. We have a proven track record in this, and we need to reestablish and reassert ourselves in the marketplace. The group has been operating at a loss for the past 4 years, and this trajectory is totally unsustainable and unacceptable. And I'm glad to say that when I started in January last year, I quickly commissioned a very quick and pointed survey to all staff, wherein we sought to understand where people's minds were at as it pertains to the sustainability of our business. And overwhelmingly, everyone came back indicating that our trajectory is unsustainable and something ought to change, and it ought to change fundamentally. So rationalization has been really bought by all staff, and it shows in the way that we've done it, and that in the last 10 months, since last 12 months, since I've started, the effort by everyone around the table has been really driving and making sure that we come out as a sustainable organization going forward. And the intent really is to turn the organization and achieve sustainable, positive trajectory into the future. As I indicated, a new strategy has been developed and approved by the board, and it's anchored on the five pillars, as I've highlighted, on the house structure, wherein financial recovery and sustainability, research and innovation, profitable commercial enterprises, business continuity and efficiencies, and culture and talent excellence are a fundamental approach in doing the business. And this has gained momentum, and we're already now working on the corporate plan for the next financial year. The board has approved in principle, but we're finalizing, dotting the I's and crossing the T's before we submit before the end of this month. And this becomes a driver for everything. Our KPIs, key performance areas, become these pillars, and every performance will be measured in line with these five pillars or five programs. And one of the most important things that I am driving very hard is stakeholder engagement, because it is the bedrock of success. When you're in business, you're not in business for yourself. You have stakeholders, you have customers, they are also stakeholders, both inside and outside. And it is important that your internal stakeholders work with you in achieving what you want to achieve outside. Otherwise, you could find a dissonance where you are outside and your internal stakeholders don't agree with you. So I think we've covered the ground in this regard, in that our internal stakeholders are fully aligned with what we are doing. And our external stakeholders, slowly but surely, are coming to the party in understanding what we are all about and what we are doing. But obviously, the proof of the pudding is always in the eating. And we need to drive our results and performance results quite hard to show that we say what we do what we say, and we will walk the talk. And NEXA is committed to forming and maintaining productive relations with all its key stakeholders and ensuring compliance with governance principles. At that point in time, I will hand back to the chairperson, Mr. Nichols. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Louisa. I've got nothing spectacular to add to that. But I think that my general comment would remain one that this turnaround seems to be real. We are beating the targets we gave ourselves a year ago, and the targets we're giving ourselves for next year are now much better than those that we projected a year ago. So I think we're on a path. I think that the one of the important things to me is the engagement with the unions, and the fact that we have them on board, and we haven't had a major crisis with unions or with any of our stakeholders over the last 2 years. I think that's quite important to us. I think we've tried to avoid being in the Mail and Guardian, and have succeeded reasonably well. With that, I will pass back to the Minister. Thank you, Minister.
I will hand over to the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee. I want to make 2 points only. One is that the presentation confirms what we raised very early at the beginning of our term here, where we walked into a series of landmines. One board was dissolved and a new one put in place, and all that board resigned one by one, and we're left with three, and they all resigned in Marseille, and we put this one. And we made a point, Honorable Chairperson, that normalizing governance practically reduces both performance and financial risk. And I'm submitting that the presentation confirms that. Number two is that when you appoint a team to operate an entity, it is always important to appoint fixers rather than alphas in an organization that needs fixing. And therefore, if you appoint fixers to fix what is broken, it normally works as a strategy. We are presenting this to you as the committee. I hand over to you, Honorable Chairperson. I've handed over to you, Chairperson.
Ayanda, it appears the Chairperson has fallen off again.
Okay, Mr. Mailem, I'm attending to the matter. Honorable members, I suggest that we ask Mr. Mahlaule to continue while I'm getting hold of the chair. Because in terms of the rules, we cannot appoint it. The chair is in the meeting. It's just that she's having a challenges with network. So can I request Mr. Mahlaule to continue in the meantime?
I will as soon as it's acceptable to the meeting.
Members, do you agree with my proposal?
I agree with the proposal, Ayanda.
Thank you, Ms. Madogo. Can you continue, Mr. Mahlaule, while I'm getting hold of the chairperson?
Thank you very much, Ayanda and members. Good morning to the minister. I have not seen the deputy minister. Good morning to members and department entity chairs and CEOs. That is the presentation, honorable members. We'll now take questions, submissions, and discussions if there are any. May I see hands that want to participate? I see Honorable Malem. Honorable Madokwe. Are there any other hands? Honorable Malinga. Any other hands? Honorable Langa. We'll take those hands in that order. Can you come, Honorable Malem?
Thank you. Thank you very much for the presentation. I have a number of concerns. My first one is that this is a very high-level presentation, and it doesn't really get down into the nuts and bolts of what your KPIs and actual programs and activities are. Now, going forward, it's difficult then to hold you accountable as NEXA for whether or not you achieve them. And this has been a concern for a while now. We haven't seen annual reports. We haven't seen APPs, et cetera, for NEXA for a couple of years. So I'm really concerned about the lack of detail behind this presentation. That said, I've been doing some research on my own, and there are a couple of issues that I want to highlight. The first is the timeline for the replacement of Safari One and the costs involved with that. Can we get some clarity on what sort of timeline we're talking about? I know that Safari One is due for decommissioning in 2030, but are we going to have a multi-purpose reactor in place by then? And what is the cost implications of that? Related to that is, where is NEXA going to find the funding for that investment? How are you going to be able to afford it, given that you're running at an operational loss over the next 2 to 3 years? Which brings me to the turnaround strategy as a whole. It's premised very heavily on receiving financing from government, and it makes a number of assumptions that NEXA will receive those or that funding. What happens if you don't, or what happens if you only receive some of that funding, given the financial constraints our fiscus is currently under? So how would you kind of address that challenge? What would you do differently? What contingency plans do you have in place for your turnaround strategy as a whole? And I'm not just talking about Safari One or the multipurpose reactor. I'm talking about the turnaround strategy as a whole. If you do not receive the full amount of investment that is required for your turnaround strategy. My next point relates to the lack of aggressive competition, if you will. I'm concerned, for example, that NTP is looking at basically maintaining its market share in radioactive isotopes rather than growing its market share. It's not out aggressively marketing or competing for market share. And I think this is problematic. I then also have a little bit of concern around the new entity or sub-entity or whatever you want to call it, the Power and Energy, the old Pelindaba Enterprises, which has now been reformed. What are you going to be doing differently in that entity to make it viable? We've heard in the past that Pelindaba Enterprises had lost its market, for want of a better word, in South Africa. What is the new entity going to do differently? How is it planning on growing and becoming viable? And my last concern is, within that entire context, where does the profitability come from for Nexa? How do we turn this into an entity that is revenue positive and net profit positive in the short to medium term? I'm not seeing anything radically different being done here, and I'd really like to know the answers to that. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Masaula. Thank you very much. I also just have a few questions to Nexa, but I'd like to first extend my greetings to everyone that's in the meeting today. My first question is primarily on the Auditor General's audit outcomes for 2020 and 2021 in relation to the report that we've just received today. Notwithstanding that we have received feedback that there has been some progress made between the entity and the AG. But what was alarming, or rather alarming, is the fact that the entity did receive another disclaimer. And amongst other things that was cited by the AG as granting that disclaimer was the fact that they were not able to gather enough evidence to show that the submitted financial statements and notes were in line with the international financial reporting standards. Also that the supporting documents or supporting information that was given did not in some instances corroborate with the information that was in the financial statement. Another matter that was raised was that there were no internal controls to ensure or to prepare consolidated financial statements in future. Another issue that was raised was the fact that the Auditor General could not find evidence to confirm reasonableness of the group's cash flow forecast and related assumptions, conditions, and events to support their assessment for viability to continue as an entity. So I just wanted to find out, since you are saying that there has been some progress made, which of these concerns that were raised by the AG have been put to bed or have been addressed by the entity? And what are the plans that are going to be put in place to ensure that these concerns, which all of them, by the way, are very important and are of concern even to ourselves, will be addressed. The second issue is the issue of the fact that nuclear energy, or rather the industry itself, is a new industry, if I may put it that way. But I wanted to find out whether there is collaboration between yourself or even the department and institutions of higher learning to ensure that we start building the necessary academic and technical skills to have this or to rather run this industry as opposed to us forever getting in foreigners and saying that, look, we don't have skills. So what are the plans that are in place to ensure that by the time that this industry is continuing, there is a collaboration between yourself and the education sector to bridge that gap of the lack of skills? Secondly, I just want to find out as well, are there any recruitment plans by the entity or even the department for young people to come into the space of nuclear energy and not just nuclear energy for that matter, but most of what your entity is dealing with. And why I'm asking that is because you find out that a lot of learners, once they finish grade 12, they have really good results. They do not know what to do post-matric. Some of them, they just know specific career paths, but there are certain career paths that they are not aware of to such an extent that some of us, you only find out in university that, well, there's also this career and that one. So what are you doing to meet young people halfway to make sure that they do get absorbed into the industry and they're able to actually see a career for themselves in that industry? The third question that I have, I think it speaks specifically to the issue of vacancies, considering the fact that we had analyzed that the vacancies that were the number one were of crucial responsibilities, and they did speak to, or they do speak rather, to the performance or the overall performance of the entity. So why did it take so long to actually fill in those vacancies? And why was it that before? Because I think that there was a comment by the minister that we need to get fixers as opposed to alphas. But why was the criteria of the people that were put before to oversee this entity not the people that the entity needed? And I think the last one is specifically on the report, where it says that the report, that the financial picture of the entity is unsustainable and there are plans in place, sure enough. But what does that mean in relation to the programs and the projects that you intend to partake in that will need financial backing? And secondly, what happens in the event that you do not meet the targets that you had in place, or the plans that you had in place do not yield the results that you're expecting by the end of this year? What plans do you have, or what is it that you'll be doing at that rate? Because you don't want a situation where you're only going to review your performance after like 3 years or whatever, as is the case where even annual reports have not been forthcoming for the longest time. I think that is all for me, chairperson of the meeting. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Matokwe. Honorable Malinga.
Thank you very much, chairperson of the session. Greetings to the minister, the next board and staff, members of the portfolio committee, our committee staff, and everybody on the platform. Chairperson, let me welcome the presentation, the long-awaited presentation by Nexa. And I think I have a few questions, Chair, that I'd like to pose based on the presentation. Chairperson, on infrastructure, Nexa's infrastructure is currently aging. What are the implications of this on business growth and job creation? On commercial program objectives, Chair, the nuclear medicine and industrial isotopes key performance areas show that the market share of molybdenum 99 MO99 is stagnant at 20% between 2021 and 2024. And yet the NTP revenue has increased in the same period. What causes revenue increases amid a stagnant market share? Lastly, Chairperson, on nuclear energy policy. Government intends to expand the nuclear power program, but there are calls to halt this due to challenges ranging from, but not limited to, the cost of construction, reactor accidents, hazards involved in waste storage, and so on. What is Nexa's take on this, since one of its mandates is to promote research and development in the field of nuclear energy? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Malinga. Honorable Langa.
Thank you very much, Chair of the Interim, and greetings everyone on the platform. Chair, we note the presentation. Chair, I think Honorable Madowe and my colleagues have covered me on some of the questions that I had or I wanted to submit. And in particular, Honorable Mylem also partially covered me on the point that this presentation wasn't detailed as anticipated, and therefore it makes it not really easy for the committee to hold the entity accountable. And I don't know if it's just myself as well, but the financial overview presentation seemed to be too brief. And somehow seem to have, I don't know, just gone over my head without grasping much. Or maybe the financials were, I don't know, maybe narrated on higher grade or not detailed as anticipated. But you must also remember that business is numbers and numbers need to make sense to us. So one needs to leave this meeting. If one were to leave this meeting without clarity on this, we wouldn't be doing justice for our presence here. So hence, Chair, if possible, I will kindly request maybe that the CFO takes us through the financial slide again and maybe also lower the grade for us to try to detail it a bit so that it makes more sense to us. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, colleagues. I'll hand over to the minister now, but before I do that, I want colleagues to bear in mind that next week we are dealing with the AG. Findings on the entity as well as the annual report of I think two or three entities if I remember very well. I think there's NexaServ and the regulator. I have no problem if the Nexa group want to expand on numbers and all of that. But I want to caution colleagues that the same numbers that they want in the financials may come in next week's meeting. So I just wanted to probably caution that they may not have included that because that we're dealing with it next week. But they will respond to themselves. Honorable Minister.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mahlaule. I'm going to give the team space to respond to a number of questions. I can only touch few. One of them is that if you are fixing an entity that is in trouble, you are fixing an entity in trouble. My own view is that I started by highlighting to all of you that when we walked in here, we walked into a situation where there was a board that was fired one Friday and a new one appointed on Saturday, and there was chaos. I walked in here, that new board had left, there were only three people left. The first step to do was to normalize governance. And we're reporting to you that governance is stable, it's working, and I said it has improved both performance and financial risk. It's up to the committee to say we see that, we don't see that. But I'm giving you that feedback as a person who works with them. And I think the CEO made the point that we don't just look on papers. We visit these entities. I've been to Pelindaba myself physically to look into these issues in practical terms. Number two, when I made the point that you appoint a fixer, and that is the kind of a leader that you need for an entity like Nexa. You don't need an alpha who is bigger than life, but you need a fixer, a person who has this sensitivity in fixing Nexa. And I think that is what we are seeing. You are correct that the financial reporting will follow. At least we've tried to bring closer the reporting of audited financial statements to the timeframes that are set. We're hoping that next time we'll comply fully. And it is not by accident, it's by design. The second thing is I think the team must respond to the question of the market share. If the market share is not declining, it's stagnant. In commercial terms, that is not a negative reporting. It may work to improve it, but when it declines, you remember, at one time, this was closed for 15 months, and it has to recoup a lost market share after that incident. And I think we need to talk that issue as responding to the crisis that we had. But I think what we should have is to give the team time to respond to the issues. David?
Thank you, Minister. What I'll do is I'll go through some of the questions. I'll be the normal thing. I'll cherry pick the ones I think I can help at, and then I'll pass across to the CEO to manage the rest of them. And I'm going in just at high level discussions. The first thing one is the Safari One discussion from a high level KPI for detail, the comment from Honourable Milam. We have submitted our annual report at the beginning of this month. It was somewhat delayed because the AG's report was delayed and we couldn't issue it there. So the details, I believe, are available in that. That should help in that area. We certainly aren't trying to hide KPIs. In terms of Safari One, you are correct, sir. The current license, the current approval of Safari One goes to 2030. It is our belief we can push Safari One slightly beyond that, potentially to 2032, 2033. It's a technical issue, and I'm not going to go into the details of that, although we have submitted to the regulator. And clearly, that is adequate time for the MPR to come online, given the funding is available, and that will be a function to a large extent of what comes back from the RFI just issued, which is asking the market of how we can go forward. But it is principally going to be looking at how do we bank the future income from the NTP process over the next 20, 30 years against the value of that. But I'll leave that over that. I will discuss the market share is mentioned as asked twice by both Honourable Milam and by Honourable Malinga. I will comment, first of all, that please understand we are 20% of the entire world market for these items. So it's not something where we're the local king in South Africa. This is world marketplace, 20%. The premise is that the NTP share, if we can maintain that share as the market evolves, that'll be quite good. The market itself is growing at about 9% a year, if I remember correctly, in real terms, hence the rise in that. We're moving out of, we're also moving into other chemicals, but I will emphasize that we are aggressively looking at the market, maintaining that market share, but I will re-emphasize, and I'll draw to be expanded further by the CEO, is that 20% of the entire world market for a high-tech item is quite a good thing for us to have in this country. And maintaining that is a challenge, never mind increasing. Just quickly, Madokwi, the vacancies, why so long? I'll be quite honest. We came in and we had an acting chief executive and we had a previous chief executive who was in the labor court appealing his termination. We couldn't go out to the market for a new CEO until we had resolved the CCMA come labor court issues with the previous CEO. That took us the first year. So essentially we appointed the new CEO, Luis Dobell, after an open vote in January of last year. He then was tasked with appointing his team. We could not start appointing his team without him being there. So that is the rationale. It's taken us this long. I would like to have had done faster, but that is the rationale of vacancies. Why so long? You can't appoint the direct reports to the chief executive and then appoint a new chief executive. That doesn't, in my opinion, work particularly well. And my last comment before I hand over was asked by Honorable Malinga, nuclear energy policy and what's the next take. I think it is quite important to understand that if you ring fence the entire nuclear industry in the country, and you look at Kuberg's life extension, which is being currently processed, but was planned for some years, and the cost of that, some 20 billion rand, Eskom's quoted, and the cash cost of running Kuberg, which has been quoted as 40 cents. I'm not anymore an Eskom, and I can't quote the Eskom numbers myself. Then what you find is if Kuberg was to have a contract to provide power to the grid for those 20 years, at the current tariff level for generation in the country, given it's a new, it's amortized completely in 2024, so from 2024 onwards, Kuberg would then be generating a cash positive position of some 7+ billion rand a year, owner of operating costs. If you then model the procurement of new nuclear plant, and you assume you're going to buy four, just for the sake of this discussion, of about 1,000 megawatts, and assume you're going to fund them through the classical export credit agency financing, which is the way virtually all nuclear export deals are funded, and you have those have their initial PPA for the first 5 or 10 years of their life at the average price of the RMIPP ones, which is an open market price of around, let's say, 1950, for the first 5 years only, then you end up with the nuclear industry affording, having no cash shortfall at any point in a program which has the first 1,200 megawatts coming on stream in 2033 and one a year thereafter for 4 years. And in fact, that also provides adequate funding for the next if you ring fence the whole thing, the free cash also supports the NEXA grant for around a billion rand a year. It includes the payment. We would include a complete cash payment for the MPR, and might even include some money for development into small modular reactors to replace the high-fault nuclear fleet. So I think that if the nuclear industry is seen as a whole, that was the question asked by Honorable Malinga, you will find that the next take is that if the nuclear industry was to be accountingly ring-fenced at a rate that is commercial in the open market, it would be a nil cash issue for the government, and in fact would become a very valuable asset after about 20 years. But even in the short term, it wouldn't have a cash shortfall. And with that, I've picked out the details that I think I can add some strategic value to, and I will pass. Oh, one other last comment, which I will make, which I occasionally point out. People ask, you know, is NEXA efficient in using its money, and is there a world benchmark to hold you against, which is the classical claim. The nearest benchmark we can find in the world is ANSTO. ANSTO is the Australian Nuclear Organization. It's almost a carbon copy of Safari, without the overheads of the previous nuclear programs. It has a research reactor. We, in fact, trade with it in terms of isotopes. It has about 1,500 people, similar to NEXA. And it seems very successful. It has a cash inflow of something over 3 billion rand a year from the state. So we are running at one-third the price of our of the nearest competitor we can find in the world. I'm not saying we should have three times the funding. I'm just saying is that that's the nearest reference we can find internationally for the cost of running an organization like Nexa. They also, by the way, sell isotopes as part of their business, but we have the license to sell those isotopes for them. And with that, I'll pass across to Mr. Tabashi to carry the rest of the questions, as I picked out the ones I liked.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'll start off with the questions in the order that they came. First from Honorable Malam, and I think this came through in, I think it was Honorable Langa, where the issue of the detail of the KPIs that have been brought on. I must say that the presentation that I made had, as a subsequent slides after the question slide, more details should anyone want to delve into the details. But the details are really centered around the efforts that are incorporated in the corporate plan for this current financial year, which is to end in the next month. And what we sought to do was not to go to town with explaining those KPIs that are premised on the old strategy, but rather give an overall view of where we are, whilst also attaching them as support slides. But we can always go to those in detail if it's needed. I'll take the tune from the chairperson on this one. I think the annual report issue has been covered by the minister. The timelines for Safari replacement. Safari currently is operating and is going through, or is being maintained through, an aging management program. And with this program, we've done lots of engineering studies that look at the components that are important for safety as a starting point. And we've determined that, and this has been shared with the National Nuclear Regulator, that we can operate Safari beyond 2030. Subject to us making those changes and modifications onto the plant and doing further studies. So whilst we talk about Safari's end of life being around 2030, it does not mean Safari goes off at the end of 2020. You cannot achieve that even for a nuclear plant, because it stays the nuclear facility for a long time. But in terms of its operations, it can operate beyond 2030, subject to the National Nuclear Regulator allowing us to do what we have set out to do. And our intent is really to make sure that there is no gap between Safari and the MPR that we are working on now, in that there must be an overlap of about a year or two until we get everything in order before we retire Safari. So our efforts towards the MPR is to ensure that we have the MPR operational on and around 2030, 2032. And we're refining our plans as we move forward. And this is being shared with the board as well. And the positive news was when the cabinet in September last year did support or announced the support of starting the project of replacing Safari. And we've taken that forward and we're well on our way. You might have seen in the last month also that we started with the request for information, because that request information will allow us to finalize and firm up on the things that are raised by, instead of us looking at what has happened in industry, because people don't share to understand, but when we engage the vendors, what you don't have, so that you can trim here, add there, and have a very firm scope. So we're setting out to achieve, to understand exactly the full scope, as well as the total cost of the project itself. And I think as we move forward with our business case on the project, we'll have more and firmer information as we move forward. Timelines, the typical timelines to construct this plant is around 5 years from start of construction to commercial operation. And
Minister, is it me only or sure Mr. Kabache disappears at times?
Sorry, I missed that, sir.
From my side, there was a point where you disappeared a bit. I'm not sure whether it's me or...
Yeah, we all experienced that.
Oh, sorry. Let me just switch off the video. Maybe
let's go back to the last point. Yes, and repeat the last point we made
on Safari. Safari and MPR. So effectively, what I was saying is we are working towards having an overlap between retiring Safari and starting off commercially operating the MPR, and by an overlap of about a year or two until we get the MPR fully functional. And the cabinet has given endorsement to start the project for the MPR, and that was in September last year, which has subsequently been followed in our midst by issuing an RFI, request for information, to the market, so that we can get firm information in terms of the timelines to construct, the scope of the project in detail, as well as the costs that are related to that. And associated with the cost is actually the funding, because there are different funding methodologies by different international vendors that can come forth. So unfortunately, I can't put the cart before the horse on this one. We need to get the RFI information, synthesize it, and internalize it into our business case and take that forward in our strides. The next point was on the turnaround strategy, which apparently is premised on a government grant. If there is no grant, what do we do? So effectively, for me here is that our drive and effort, and my executives can tell you, is that we are doing all we can with our activities to ensure that we remain less of a burden to fiscus. So we want to reduce our effect of the burden to fiscus, but there are mandates that NEFA has to fulfill on behalf of the government. For example, the disused facilities that need to be decontaminated and decommissioning that do not talk to production of isotopes as we do today. Also the safeguards facility that we're doing on behalf of the government. So there are several such programs that are funding those programs, not necessarily for the viability of NEFA per se, but just to fulfill the mandate. But our effort is to make sure that we, on the commercial, profitable commercial enterprises, they are standalone and they are market-facing in true sense of the word. And those that require funding, because the research by its very nature needs to be funded, because as part of the research, some of the research is done and it stops, some of it proceeds all the way to commercialization. So I want to promise that our effort is not to be more of a burden on fiscus, but rather less of a burden to the fiscus, to the constrained fiscus. The issue of NTP, I think it was touched on slightly by the chairman, but suffice to say that we are recovering from the historical closure of NTP around 2018, and we had to put that target there of 20% of the global demand. And I must say that we are in that domain. It must not be seen as stagnant, because that 20% is growing every year in terms of the market size, because the market size is growing every year. But I must state that as part of the what we've included in our strategic plan for NTP is to ensure that, number one, we've got product diversity, because at this point in time, there is molybdenum 99, which is dominating our revenue space in NTP, but we need other products, because you know that in market, you can't rely on one product. Otherwise, if that market loses either the share or even the flavor of the day, your business collapses. So we are diversifying the isotopes that we are getting into the market. We are increasing our base into the radiopharmaceutical strategy, as well as increasing our customer base. Whilst we have got a good footprint in the USA, in Europe, and growing in South Africa, we also want to grow further into the African continent and even beyond in other regions that I have not mentioned. So it's not only just admiring the 20%, but it's to ensure that you keep your focus where you are, but you explore the other areas wherein you can still grab the market share. The power and industry part of the organization, it is definitely a viable aspect of our business and how we have repositioned it, because what we found is that the old construct of Pelindaba Enterprises was that everything was under one house. And we found that in the event where you did not have orders coming from the market, your equipment was standing idle, your personnel was standing idle. We have refocused that all the equipment goes to the nuclear center, which is the nuclear operations. The project management is also centralized, so that that part of the organization is an organization which seeks to market and grab the market share whilst utilizing the resources that are centralized in the organization. And that will make sure that our facilities have a high utilization rate, our staff is highly utilized, and our projects start and stop, because how that organization works is on projects, wherein projects do start and they stop. And when projects stop, you move people to the next project versus waiting for the other project that comes. But premised on that is also the marketing that we need to do, because those facilities, whilst they are nuclear qualified, they can produce components for general industry, which means we produce components to the highest standard. So there's a big market out there that we have not tapped into, and we'll be setting out the new lead of that organization to ensure that we've got our footprint fully established out there. In terms of profitability, I must state that in as much as today we're just talking about the current financial year's corporate plan, and I think typically this is presented in May, the profitability that you would see if we're presenting to you the corporate plan that will be submitted by the end of this month, which looks into the next financial year going forward, we would actually see how our revenue versus cost is actually taking us from the current picture that was shown here, because we have to stay true to what was requested. It was the corporate plan for 2021-2022. But for the 2022-2023 corporate plan, which we'll be submitting in 2 weeks' time or so, you will see a fundamental shift in that the reason that we are migrating towards lower losses, and I'll be stretching my team to get to break even, is really premised on ensuring that we have a very good and healthy balance of revenue versus cost. But also, one of the things that we have done is we have found that there was duplication in some areas of the business. Our restructuring has allowed us to not allow those duplications to exist. In the past, for example, we had 3 CFOs, and now we have 1 CFO accountable for the group, and we'll have general managers that are really focusing on the financial aspects of the different entities. So cost-wise, we are really driving them down whilst we are seeking out new revenue avenues. Then coming to Honorable Madowell's question, on the AGA outcomes, I think it was alluded that this will be presented on the 1st of March as part of the annual report. But suffice to say that at a high level, we're coming from the past financial year of 2019-20 with about 160 AGA findings, and to the current report that we're presenting on the 1st of March, that has got 63 AGA findings. And of those, some of them have been resolved, and some of them have been fully resolved. Some of them were on our way to resolving them before the end of the financial year. And what we are doing is we also are getting internal audit and external audit to actually look into how we actually, whether these are effectively closed or not before we finish this financial year. Our view is to make sure that as we move into the next financial year, there are none of the historical matters that are still burdening us. But at this point, I'd like to just give to the CFO to talk about, at high level, the AG outcomes without going into detail. Precious, please come through.
Thank you, CEO, and thank you, Honorable Madogo, for the question. So in terms of the disclaimer audit opinion that was indicated, what I'd like to add is that what we have done is that we've looked at the audit opinion and we've put it into 7 themes that we're able to then address. So there was a question that was raised around the cash flow forecast, which is one of the aspects around going concern. And in that, what we have been able to show, and I think the proof of the pudding is in the eating, is that we're currently in the month of February and the financial year ends at the end of March. So we are able to show that we are a going concern. We have also started with an audit recovery plan where what we have been doing is to compile all the required supporting documentation which the GCO mentioned, which the auditors will look at. And part of those is to have all of the supporting information readily available so that we're able to have evidence and show what we have been saying all along in terms of the going concern considerations. So with the cash flow forecast, that aspect has been addressed. There were questions in terms of the IFRS. This is also one of the themes as well that was raised. What we are looking at there as well is to look at the various checklists. The audit recovery plan is one which is monitored on a bi-weekly basis, and the actions have been agreed with the AGSA. So one facet of that, which is one of the seven, is looking at how we're addressing the IFRS. So there are some IFRS aspects which we are looking at as part of the recovery that needs to be addressed. The issue around the supporting documentation, there were two avenues and facets of that, which is actually the third element of the seven themes that we're looking at. So one aspect was the opening balances. So because the auditors were looking at historical opening balances into 2004 and 2015 as part of the audit, there were some supporting documents that were not readily available timeously. So what we have done this time around and as part of the audit recovery program is that we are putting together the supporting documentation and going back into historical years to be able to show that the documentation is available. We normally keep documents on site for a period of time. However, because the audit period is a 3-day turnaround time, it was an aspect around timing. However, how we are resolving that is by ensuring that we are having a file that is built that supports the audit recovery plan of how we're addressing the various issues. And then finally, just to touch on the other aspects around the internal controls in preparing financial statements. So those are prepared and we have been able to display, especially with the audit recovery plan, the manner in which we have addressed all of the internal control weaknesses that were cited. And as part of that, a recovery plan that we have put together and is monitored on a bi-weekly basis with supporting documentation, we're also able to show the process flows of how the various transactions align and work, so that to be able to allay the auditor's fears that there are no processes. So we have those documents and we are currently seized with compiling that. And the intention is that in the next month, which is the month of March, we're engaging with the AG to come and do an early audit. And in that manner, we'll be able to look through the documentation that we have been compiling to be able to have a sense to say that the aspects that they had raised have been adequately addressed. I'll pause at this point in time. There was a comment on the financial statements, and I think maybe just to add one other aspect, as the GCO has added, is that going forward, the picture does look quite positive. And how we've been able to achieve that, the question that was asked by Honorable Laga, is the fact that we have looked at our expenditure and have been able to streamline that expenditure according to the various revenue streams that we have available. So on the revenue line, we have been looking at diversifying revenue streams to be able to see how we can expand on the revenues. However, we have then curtailed our expenditure to say that this is what we have available. So how do we streamline and prioritize the various expenditure? So not to have a wish list, for want of a better word, of things that would be nice to have, but to be able to ensure that we are addressing the priority areas, and those are the ones that we are addressing. I think I'll pause at this point in time, GCO, and hand over back to you.
Thank you very much, CFO. So with that, just to close off on the audit aspect without going to town, is that we come from an era of when NETSA used to have audits that took an order of 8 months or so. And this last audit that we just did only took 3 months. And we really were, the AG was tough with us and we're also tough with them. And there was a healthy engagement in the process. And going forward, we need to keep to the standard of the 2 months that is set out for the audit to take place. And I'm encouraged with what I saw last year, and Patricia did a very good job in that regard. So moving on to the questions that were raised by Honorable Madogo. One of the questions was about nuclear energy and as to whether we're collaborating with institutions of higher learning. We are very privileged in that the nuclear domain is a domain wherein sharing of knowledge is free. There's a free flow of traffic in terms of collaborations and sharing of information. That's all the way from the International Atomic Energy Agency, where there's a body of knowledge of different streams on what they do. And we do have some of our young people participating in those forums. Internally, well, locally, we have collaborations with various institutions, and I'm talking commercial at this point in time, in the form of the Technology Innovation Agency and the others, Sanedis and the others. So we do collaborate with quite a lot of research institutions around the country, even better so when they are within the DMRE stable. In terms of academic institutions, we have got a very close link with Steve Biko Academic Hospital, which is not far from us. We work very closely with them in terms of the projects that we do, and they provide great support, and other academic institutions. But in terms of higher learning, we are also working with the young South African Young Nuclear Professionals Organization, wherein they are very active within our site, and there's also Women in Nuclear Program, which has also got a structure inside, which allows to bring all the youngsters within the organization to participate in various forums around the country and make sure that there's that cross-pollination and collaborations where possible. And we're also making an endeavor of making sure that one of the key projects that we have, transformation, forms the bedrock of participation in that regard. The next question was, I think the recruitment plans for young people, I think that one is very, very, very covered. We've got a schools program as well to make sure that there's a school nearby here in Attridgeville that is part of our partnering, and also as part of what we call the Public Safety Information Forums, where we share the programs. And what we do is to make sure that people are aware of where we're going and what our outlook is going into the future. And vacancies, the chairperson touched on that, especially at the senior level. We had to be systematic and start with the board, the CEO, and now just finalizing the executives, and that will be followed by senior management. Honorable Malinga mentioned the issue around the aging infrastructure. It is a reality that we are in a campus that was built many, many years ago. However, what we are doing, we have to, I think the beauty of the nuclear industry is that it is highly regulated. So you can never skimp on maintenance on the minimum things that are needed. And that has shown itself even in other areas like the electricity market, where the nuclear regulation, we tend to have very good reliability of the assets. So as it pertains to the nuclear safety aspect of our plant, yeah, I mean, as much as it's old equipment, it is functional and reliable equipment. And we uphold maintenance programs and the maintenance regimes for all our equipment. So there will never be a point wherein we are focusing on production and not focusing on nuclear safety. Our view is always to say our equipment must stand the first test, which is nuclear safety, followed by the second test, which is production. I think the two issues on stagnation as well as on nuclear energy policy were covered by the chairperson. And Honorable Lang raised the issue around the detail of information. But I'll be in the hands of the chairperson because we've got the slides that are talking more about the KPAs. And we can also flash the final slide and allow the CFO to go to town in explaining what needs to be explained, but we're in your hands. At that point, Chairperson, I think I've covered all the questions, unless there is one that you feel that I have not answered. Back to you, Mr. Nichols.
Thank you, Louisa. And I think I will ask the Chair if we are being asked to present more financial details. Just in terms of, well, I'd add one comment that the CEO did not mention is that in terms of the reliability of our equipment, the Safari Research Reactor is the top, we understand the statistic, is the top performing production reactor in the world in terms of days online per year. It is truly one of the best, if not the best in the world at that. With that, I'll pass back to the chairman, honorable chairman, and ask you if you wish us to present, go back to the financial discussions.
My understanding is that next week you will be dealing with the financial reporting.
I will therefore defer with happiness.
Yeah. I'm handing over to you, Dr. Mataule.
Thank you very much, Minister, with your team, and correctly so. I want to persuade honorable members that let's allow the presentations on financials to be presented to us next week and step off the presentation on Nexa and move on to CEF. I'm advised that the chair of the portfolio committee is back on the platform. Allow me to hand over to the chairperson.
No, thank you, Honorable Mashaule, for holding the fort. Please, my apologies. We have a crisis of a blackout, including the office that I'm using. But without any further delays, can we give in to staff to make the presentation up until 12:30?
Chair?
Yes.
Yes, it's Honorable Langa. No, I just wanted to say before CEF comes in that the chair of the interim, when you persuade, you check with the person who submitted that question. So now I feel somehow suppressed, you know, even though I had no issue, you know, with it being deferred to or moved to next week. So maybe in future, if it could be done in that format. Thank you.
My sincere apologies.
Let it be noted. I understood to also having to give CEF at least a chance. Then we will see when CEF is done. But we take note of what you say, Honorable Langa. I don't think it was intentional from Honorable Mashaule. Can we give in to CEF? Honorable Minister?
No, in my introductory remarks, I covered both Nexa and CEF. And for information, I also put on record that I would like to be released at 12. That's because of the telephone. Thank you very much.
Okay, now I had the 12 o'clock. Okay, CEF, can you, the chair?
Thank you very much, Honorable Minister. I appreciate the introduction earlier. I would like to greet the Honorable Chair of the Committee, Honorable Luzipho. If I can also include in my greetings the members of the Committee, the DG and the DMRE colleagues, and also the chairs of the subsidiaries of the CEF Group, and all the executives that are led by the CEOs, the chair of Nexa and the executives, colleagues, and all protocol observed. So if I could just start off by just introducing first the chairs of the subsidiaries of CEF in alphabetical order, starting with the interim chair, Chair Madogwe, who is chairing the AE subsidiary. IGES, chaired by Chair Sonso, and PASA by Chair Madala. Petro SA Chair Boya and SFF Chair Makubane, I believe they are also in on call on the platform. I think it's important just to set the scene and to look at the context that the CEF group of companies is really operating in, it will play across the whole value chain, the energy value chain. And it is really a very complex environment which has a number of challenges that we have to consider as we play our oversight role across the group. There are many challenges both locally and globally, which do affect our business. It is a very complex environment, very competitive in terms of the multinationals that we have in our space. We also are affected, of course, by the geopolitical influences, and notably the Ukraine-Russia relations currently, and we find that that has a price an impact on the price of oil, which then impacts on our operations as a whole. So as we play our oversight role as a board, we have to take that into consideration and make sure that we support our executives in executing the strategy. And more importantly is that we have tightened on the oversight activities to make sure that we support the overall strategy of the company. We do work very strongly together with the board subsidiary boards to make sure that we execute right across the company. But more specifically, we do have to focus on PetroSA, which the minister has highlighted is our problem child. We have a number of efforts that have been put in place in order to stabilize the organization. We have a collaborative oversight structure that we have put in place, which we call the tripartite war room, which specifically looks at the financial recovery activities and also the operations revival. And talking specifically now to the merger activities, which also the minister spoke to in his introductory remarks, we have focused ourselves on the activities that are geared towards incorporation of the SANPC, more specifically talking to the mobilization of the governance structures and also capacitating the SANPC and making sure that when day one does eventually happen, we have all our activities on the go and ready to go. And finally, we are obviously seized with other overall group sustainability activities through which we want to advance the growth strategy of the organization and also provide support and guidance to the AE group, which also the minister highlighted needs a lot of attention and some turnaround and growth strategies. So as a group, we are looking at all of those activities and making sure that from a board point of view, we provide that guidance, that overall support. And we also ensure that the executives are coordinating their activities to achieve the final agenda of the company. At this point, I would like to hand over to the Group CEO of CEF, Dr. Pulo, who is going to introduce the colleagues that he is going to be presenting with, and then also lead us in the presentation. So I would sign off at this point and hand over to the CEO. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honourable Minister, Honourable Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee, members of the Portfolio Committee, colleagues, chairpersons of subsidiaries, including Fonex, and fellow CEOs, thank you very much for the opportunity. Allow me, Chairperson, to then run through the screen for our agenda. Seemingly my system is frozen. Let me just quickly put it in the screen from slide mode. Okay. In terms of the table of contents, Chairperson, is that I will be doing this self-group overview and on internal and external perspective, which the Chairperson has well summed it up. So I will touch on key issues on that, and the next point, when it comes to the group strategic response and corporate planning, the CEO of SFF, Mr. Mwaku, will cover that. The self-group financials, our acting CFO, Ms. Murabe, will cover that one. On broad strategic initiative and risk, Mr. Lamakang Peter from the AE company will cover that. And an update on current business performance against predetermined objective, Mr. Naidu will come in for emphasis, especially on challenges that relate to PetroSA. Having said that, Chairperson, I think you would notice that throughout the presentation, and honorable members, that as we navigate through our presentation, four themes are emerging. One being the group growth agenda. The second being the group cost optimization initiative. The other one is the centrality of the major project towards the group turnaround And lastly, the governance and oversight aspects, which include aspects of consequence management and litigation aspect. I repeat quickly, four emerging themes, one being the group growth agenda, the cost optimization exercises within the group, the centrality of the major project towards the group turnaround, and the governance and oversight. Now, in terms of our mandate, the chairperson and honorable members, through you, Minister, is that we are mandated basically to lead a diversified energy company. Contrary to the view that we are not progressive with regards to other energy sources, actually we've been playing a leading role in incubating some of this initiative as the staff group of companies. And we are also the catalyst for economic growth. Having said that as well, we do have a dual mandate, that one of that being developmental and commercial. And to balance the two is often not an easy task. But also, what is the key is that we are mandated to ensure the security of supply through the reduction of dependency on international oil companies. And our execution arm, they include AE, which is mandated to in securing the, and producing the beneficial and to beneficiate mineral resources. As the minister has said, is that we need to really focus on the sleeping giant and make sure that it plays its role. We've been so far focusing on coal, but there are other energy sources that are now playing in the renewables that we're seeing a growth prospect in them, and efforts are underway in pursuing such. When it comes to PASA, they are mandated in promoting and exploring the onshore and offshore oil gas resources on behalf of government, and so far we've seen them doing tremendous work towards achieving that objective. And the other three entities, as indeed both the minister and the chairperson of the board have alluded to, that we are at the point whereby we need to progress with regards to the implementation of the merger of these three entities. And the whole group turnaround plan is really premised on the merger of these three entities. We're looking at the aspect of storage from one end, and bring it all together so that it's seamless with the gas transmission pipelines infrastructure, and also the issue of exploration and production of oil and gas in that regard. It must be noted that we are indeed an execution arm of the department, and as a result, we are supporting the NDP initiatives, and we operate across indeed the value chain, as it was alluded earlier on. Honourable members, in terms of the operating environment among the global forces shaping the future operating environment, there are six areas that we have analysed, and those also don't necessarily exclude initiatives of the net zero imperatives, hydrogen economy initiatives, just transition as an emphasis of policy in our country, the RIP targets as it were. Those four, six areas of focus mainly, I will touch on about four of them, which I feel are important. Is the first one being the geopolitical transition. The chairperson has also touched already on the tension between Ukraine and Russia, which we are watching closely because it will have an impact on our portfolio, as it were. And secondly, the geo-economic disruptions, as they were that we're noticing increasing pervasive use of economic instruments for geostrategic purposes, an example being China, where it's funding a lot of infrastructure projects, including energy and other infrastructure, and using that to leverage on raw material, and also more and more pressure on the funding initiatives, where there is some form of limitation, especially of some of the sources of energy that we are operating in. We cannot, of course, leave the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic as it were. Chairperson is still touching on those trends. I must say for us, it's a question of how do we then look at the impact of this and what do we do as a group in order to ensure that as we operate in this volatile and unpredictable environment, we continue to survive. And for us, we therefore took a position that we need to continue to be resilient against the global forces so that we minimize the dependency on multinational, so that we are able as a state to ensure the security of supply. Also need to increase energy supply options and availability and increasing fragmented, competitive and value chain, whilst encouraging investment to grow the economy amid pressure from financial institutions. We also need to navigate the energy transition while providing opportunities to workers in legacy energy system where jobs are at risk. We also need to be honest with our assessment that indeed, whilst with renewables as well, there is job creation during the construction phase. After the construction phase, it tends to there tend to be a lot of job losses. And the question is, how do we then get the workers to be trained in such a way that as the industry moves, which is the last bullet point here, towards 4IR technologies, that workers are trained? And what it means is that as a country, we need to focus more on R&D, including for some of the sources of energy that we are currently using. Looking at the local outlook, Chair, I just want to say one thing is that why is it important for us to monitor the performance on the GDP? We know that as the energy sector, we are growing in tandem with the growth in the GDP. And we do know our constraints as such. As a result, as a group, we have, like I said earlier on, I've said in order for us to grow beyond this limitations on the GDP, we have to drive the issue of aggressive growth initiatives, and a number of acquisitions have been made in that regard, and I'm sure we'll be able to touch on that later on. Having said that, Chairperson, honorable members, I would like to touch on our SWOT analysis, wherein when we look at particularly our threats, we do know that we have a challenge on Threat A, and Mr. Naidu will touch on that in terms of the initiatives that we have to turn around our GL into a very functional and a well-performing refinery. We also know that one of our biggest challenges there is the DECOM. If we had no burden of the DECOM liability, the group would be quite in a liquid position. It is one burden that we are looking into, including the methodologies that we use in calculating it, Jefferson. We are also looking at the issue of developmental programs, competing for resources with commercial projects, and lack of strategic asset allocation, as it were. When it comes to the weakness, Jefferson, one single area of challenge that we have is that we are single source entities almost across all our subsidiaries. And the drive for diversification in order for us to mitigate against some of the shocks is underway and is part of our the corporate plan moving forward. In terms of our strength, we have a competitive advantage as an SOE in the energy landscape, and we've seen basically a number of private sectors that are really willing to partner with us on other initiatives, and that on its own, we're seeing it as a strength that we need to leverage on. In terms of the opportunities that are there, we have seen that if we coordinate ourselves even as SOEs and also exploiting the government-to-government relationships, we can basically change the fortunes of the group as it were. And some of these initiatives have already started. and also issues of energy commodity trading is an aspect that we have neglected for quite some time, and we are seeing value in exploiting that space, Chairperson. I'll hand over to Mr. Mwahi for the next slide. Mr. Mwahi.
Thank you, CEO. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and Honorable members of the committee, Minister, Chairpersons of the entities who are here, and colleagues and other CEOs. Next slide, please. Thank you very much, Chair. So having considered the environment under which we operate, Chairperson, we have to then think about, you know, our strategic interventions as we're doing this corporate plan. And obviously, Chair, we have to think very hard because our entities are not in the best financial shape. The strategy was underpinned by stabilizing of SEF Group and improving long-term sustainability, and make sure that the group actually becomes more relevant. We don't just become one of those entities and not knowing what we should be doing for the government. Drive growth and increase market share through diversification and income stream diversification as well, Chair, because as CEO just said, most of our entities would have one product and one customer, and we view that as a serious risk to the sustainability of the group. The third one, Chair, development of key energy infrastructure. You know, we have seen in the last few months that some of the refineries are flipping over, and actually the infrastructure is going to be absolutely key to make sure that we can support economic development and growth, and make sure that we continue to execute our mandate around security of supply. And group consolidation to exploit energies and strategic relevance, and actually turning around the entities which are in trouble. One of the issues that we identified, Chair, is the fact that we duplicate a lot of effort in some areas, hence one of the key issues that we had to deal with was the merger that CEO, Chair, and the Minister mentioned earlier on of IGAS, SFF, and PetroSA. In terms of response to internal and external forces, Chair, we've got you know, a list of issues, but I would like to pick up a key one being PetroSA financial crisis. And we actually just thought, if we don't deal with that, the group is at risk because it is one of our biggest entities. Key strategic teams, Chair, consolidation and turnaround, and those will come through as we go through our measures and look at what we measure, what we focus on. Commercial sustainability is key because we are very clear that, you know, it's not going to be easy to get any funding from anywhere. So we need to focus on self-help and make sure that we are financially sustainable as we actually execute our mandate. A long-term strategy growth, that share is very important. We have embarked on a number of projects, and that will come through as we talk through the strategy. And operational efficiency, we looked at our cost base as well, and we worried about, you know, we a bit bloated, and we have to be fit for purpose to make sure that we can execute. And of course, Chair, human capital and organizational alignment was key for us to be able to get rid of overlaps to make sure that we were the best in class in terms of our employees who are working for the organization. In terms of the outcome looking 2025, we want at least 5% market share. We're looking for 4 billion return by 2025. And our base is 12%, which is actually also come from treasury in terms of expectation. Brand reputation, Chair, I think we actually took the view that we tend to not talk about the good things that we are doing. We also are known for wrong reasons, And we actually thought, you know, it's important that we rebuild our brand and of course deal with a South African National Oil Company, which is the merger of the three entities. And we said 2.7 billion of our income should come from new business. So a big focus around growth, performance culture is important, strategic acquisition, and of course the downstream presence. What we realized is that in terms of supplying in the market, we don't have strong presence and we need to focus on that. Thank you, Chair. Next. This slide, Chair, is actually talking about the macroeconomic indicators that we had to take as assumptions as we did the plan. And Chair, the key ones that actually tend to impact on our plan and execution and delivery is exchange rate. And at the time of doing the plan, our exchange rate was, I looked at around 14.62, is now around 15. The second one, which is key, is the oil price. You know, the oil price, we projected $69 per barrel. And as at yesterday, the oil price was around 93. So obviously, I mean, the impact of the tensions in Europe is actually impacting on that. Chair, I want to spend a lot of time on that slide. CEO talked about it, but the key on that slide is actually to indicate that we've got a dual mandate, the economic mandate and the social mandate. And as we work through the plan, we need to actually balance and make sure that we don't focus in one area and lose focus on the other. Next slide, please. Chair, this slide is actually talking back to what I mentioned earlier on around a key strategic themes that came through as we did the plan. And it's worth actually highlighting the fact that if you look at the first three, which is consolidation and turnaround, commercial sustainability, strategy and long-term growth, those only take 80% of our scorecard. And we're deliberate to say that as leaders, employees of this organization, we actually need to be paid to make sure that these organizations are sustainable. So we are measured on those, and the focus is on those three measures. And when you go to the right, you'll see the outcome that we set for ourselves in each one of those measures to make sure that we deliver and actually we measure what has been done in terms of delivery. Not that human capital and organizational alignment is not important, it's just as important, although the score is slightly lower, and operational efficiency comes through their chair. So that's actually our scorecard, Chair, and as we go through, the CFO comes through with the numbers, you know, all those things and the targets will be coming through in terms of how we perform. And with that, Chair, I'll hand over to the CFO to talk through the numbers. Thank you, CEO. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, CEO. Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee, Honorable Minister, DG and Chairs of the Board, CEOs and colleagues. I'm going to present the financial
recording stopped
and the position of the SERV Group. What I need to mention is that at the time of planning, the assumptions that we have used were as at the way the CEO has mentioned, but the position has since changed. You'll see later in the presentation when we take stock of quarter three financial performance and position, how those assumptions have impacted our financial performance. So on this slide, we are showing our financial plan and financial performance over the planning period. And what is important to note is that we had anticipated that the group will generate the net loss of 168 million over the first 3 years of the planning period. And on the outer year of the planning period, we anticipated a net profit of 223. And we expected the position to continue after the planning period. And the main entity that really contributed to the net
recording in progress
financial year is Petro SA as well as Cepsoc. And then for Petro SA, the main factors that contributed to the net losses of 825 over the 3 years on average is the suboptimal performance of the GTL refinery. And also at the time, we had anticipated the low oil price projections for Petro SA Ghana. But as we have noticed, this position has also changed over time. Now for Cepsoc, the major contributor to the net losses on the first 3 years is the escalating operating costs as well as the low income generated. But I need to mention that the operating costs that we have projected there is not consumption and expenditure, it's actually investment, it's the developmental costs for the project that we want to invest in to support our investment drive. On the next slide, we are showing contribution by individual subsidiaries for the financial performance for 2021-22 financial year. You will notice here that the three entities that contribute to the net loss of 43 at the end of the financial year, 43 million, is actually Cepsoc, Petro SA, as I've mentioned in the previous slide, and also PASA. And for PASA, what I need to mention is that the shortfall that is recorded there would be funded from the reserves that they have. And the main reason for this shortfall is the fact that the self-generated income and the amount that is received from a national treasury is not enough to cover their operational costs. And I need to mention as well that for this 21-22 financial year, the net loss that is recorded there is less than the average that I've indicated of 168, mainly because the group anticipated to sell Ghana assets in the last quarter of the financial year. And also we had anticipated that the acquisition of the additional 15% of the Romco project would have been concluded and would be benefiting from the dividends that would be generated from the full 40% shareholding in that asset. On the next slide, we are now showing the statement of financial position. Important to note is that during this plan, we anticipated to score low on the cash flow ratio of 2:1. We anticipated that we are not going to achieve the target. And we also anticipated that we are not going to achieve the target of equity to debt of 60 to 40% as set by National Treasury. And the main reason for this is that we anticipated to invest a lot on the growth projects, which is going to increase our debt, and then our equity will also reduce as a result of us putting equity for the projects that we want to invest in. And it is important to note as well that the group, we anticipated that it will remain solvent throughout the planning period, with the net asset value of 6.3 billion. And our liabilities are mainly taken up by the rehabilitation provision, which is the environmental liability, which takes up 50% of our total liabilities. On the statement of cash flow, important to note is that on the base year, which is 2020-21 financial year, our cash balance is sitting at 13.7 7 billion and it is anticipated to reduce to 3.7 billion in the outer year. The main reason that contributes to the reduced cash balance is that we wanted to put some equity on the investment projects that we intending to undertake during the planning period. But the funding model would take a position where we put equity and also raise loans from financial institutions to fund our investment life. That brings me to the end of the finance presentation. I'll hand over to Mr. Pito for the next presentation.
Thank you, Mayor. Let me start by saying good morning to Minister, Portfolio Chair, Honourable Members, other CEOs and other chairpersons. Most of what has been presented on this slide has been said, so I'll just go to the next slide just to show the executive summary of the top risk. As you can see, there's extreme high and moderate. I'd like to concentrate on the extreme risk and not saying the other ones, the moderate to high, are not very important. So if you look at the next slide, on the financial side of it, the Petro SA story has been mentioned before. But what I'd like to actually emphasize on that, on the list of things that are there, is that to improve the financial viability of the group, you will see we had the turnaround strategies that have been mentioned, and also the sharing or the co-sharing of responsibilities among the group, which can lead to cost-cutting efficiencies in the system. The second one that I like to allude to is that the headcount cost through talent sharing or Section 189 labor processes. The shared services that are happening in other companies are actually going to benefit us. If you look at the whole group, we're all operating mostly in Africa nationally, and instead of having separate entities or having different, so the mandate is different, but the experience and the knowledge and the technical know-how of certain countries can actually reduce the cost for a certain entity or entry cost for a certain entity. That's why it's important that the shared services initiative is underway. Looking at strategy and project execution, I think the measures being discussed on a lot, but where the emphasis comes is your group integrated funding and investment model. So some of the groups, they can do better if we have this integrated funding model developed to a level where we can actually do it ourselves. And I know the key to funding is holding on the governance of the companies. And I think the group CEO have said it, the funding is very, very important part of turnaround strategies. So we're looking at the whole acquisition and growth strategy where the parent company can look at and distribute to some of the subsidiaries that we can actually execute it as a joint team rather than individual teams. And the third one is operating models and synergies. I think the measure has been discussed, but the leadership forum, I think, is important because 9 out of 10, we can reduce costs by just sharing ideas. It was mentioned that the financial sort of responsibilities can be meshed, or I heard that another company is doing it. Those are the things that we're actually looking at, because once you start centralizing the finances and the corporate governance, everything else is tend to be easier. Your synergies that have been discussed in your scorecard are going to actually lead in the next one, which is the development of group-wide policies. And this is important, again, your group-wide policies for that governance activities that have been mentioned before. I'm also going to go to, I think, slide 25, profitability by companies. That was discussed more in detail by the finance lady, but just to what I'd like to highlight there is the financial governance, which was one of the risks there. Should that change, this picture can change, because now you are now amenable to having partnership with a private sector, either as a JV or an international player. So you can see our red button there is the financial governance. So you can see that at the bottom there, slide 25, that the red button that we're referring to the financial government, which means a lot of effort has to be done to financially sustain the group and to look into governance. Next slide. So I think that the following slide has been discussed in detail. So I'm just going to give to my colleague at the Bradley. Thank you, Brian.
Now, good morning to the Chair and Honourable Members of the Portfolio Committee. Good morning, Minister, DG, DDGs and colleagues from the DMRE. Good morning to all the chairpersons, both from Nexa and the SEF Group, and the executives, both from Nexa and the SEF Group. When we last engaged through the tripartite collaboration with PetroSA, we had identified interventions to not only reduce the losses, but stabilize and then grow the organization. It's my intent to take you through some of the progress we've made, but also some of the challenges we are experiencing in the system. To the slide that's up on the screen, the intent of the slide up on the screen is to showcase the collaborative effort in recognizing not only the challenges we experience, but also recognizing that it's up to us to come up with solutions. On the right-hand side of the slide that's up on the screen is the collaboration between PetroSA, our direct shareholder, and of course the ultimate shareholder. And then it's also safe to say that during this collaboration or engagement, we also engage within the SEF group where support is required from either sister or brother companies within the SEF group. If I can quickly highlight just on the left-hand side, point number seven, which is the key enabler to the collaboration of the tripartite, is to unblock blockages that exist through the system and fast-track the key initiatives. Of course, not compromising the governance processes that are in place. Thank you. See if we can move to the next slide. I think what's critical for me on the next slide is to talk to the survival, the improvement, and the repositioning. What's up on the slide with, without reading every single text that's there is the survival. We identified that it's important to establish the cash management office, which we have done, where we release the working capital or cost to be spent through a governance process that requires additional oversight and additional approval, together with identifying cost-cutting opportunities in the organization, and I'll talk to that soon, together with divesting on non-profitable businesses, or more importantly, disposal of the non-core assets of the non-profitable areas. In saying that, we also then identified improvement interventions on the supply chain, which talks to decreasing the third-party spend. We further identified improvement opportunities in operations so as to make sure we only spend what is necessary and only do what is necessary, and together with the organizational rationalization, which I will also share a bit of detail on the next slide. Thirdly, and most importantly, is the repositioning of PetroSA, not only for the SA NPC, but in the short, medium, and long term. I think we've alluded to earlier in the presentation of the importance of the downstream business. We've also alluded to earlier the importance of sourcing commercially viable feedstocks so we can get what we call the midstream business going again. And we've alluded to the high fixed costs that the company currently exists and how we can and the initiatives to talk to reducing those high fixed costs. The next slide is simple in picture mode, but if I can talk to it a bit more. Some of the progress we've made on the upstream, we have identified non-core assets as we had presented previously. Some of those assets have been progressed through the government process and through the disposal stage. Some of those assets are still in the, if I call it the procurement or the disposal phase, and we hope to conclude that soon. On the decommissioning liability in the upstream, very key intervention, as Dr. Pulo mentioned. We have put together a team. We have managed to identify reduction opportunities for the decommissioning liability, and we continue to assess those as the market changes or as technology changes. Very importantly, on the upstream, I can give feedback that at the last time we spoke, we were identified the find in Mossel Bay with Total as a key potential feedstock source. We are busy with negotiations with the entity, and we hope that that will conclude soon so we can move forward on that. I think in the midstream business, very, very importantly, the refinery is on care and maintenance or preservation. Attempts for liquids feedstock is not commercially viable at this point in time due to the market trends. But at the same time, we are busy with the study, which we will conclude in the next few weeks, to determine the ideal feedstock for the facility, after which we can fix and restart the facility thereof. I think in the downstream, without going into too much detail, we are satisfying and interventions to increase our current customer base. We have optimized and improving on the depots of the assets that we have within our stable and the bonding thereof, so we can utilize that better. And very importantly, the two retail stations that we managed to commission, if that's the right word, we do have intentions and are progressing to increase the retail presence of the group in South Africa. Last but certainly not least, on the corporate, I think just to spend a bit more minutes on this. One is the operating model. We have reviewed the operating model. We have reviewed the organizational structure. Yes, we have engaged in a Section 189 process to share with Chair and the Honourable Members. Today is actually the third meeting of the consultation process, where we are engaging and looking at alternatives to minimize or reduce the impact of the headcount reduction on the organization. But very importantly, also looking at alternatives to reduce and mitigate the impact on the geographies, of course, Mossel Bay being the largest geography of PetroSA and the economy thereof. Further to that, leveraging of the Ghana assets, if Chair and the Honourable Members will recall, we have an entity called PetroSA Ghana, which has an investment in the field in Ghana. We have utilized that investment positively to declare dividends and funding into the organization, but we are also intending to utilize that investment to leverage the liquidity of the organization going forward. Cash preservation initiatives, many, many interventions have been put in place. We have been successful on some of the interventions, being renegotiating contracts throughout the organization or with the service providers to reduce the monthly cost. But we continue. We haven't completed. There are still a few contracts that we are engaging in the negotiations, and we hope to conclude all of that very, very soon. Equally important is the fixed cost reductions. On the cash containment, we've looked at all the fixed cost reductions, from insurances to operating costs to catalysts to chemicals, and we managed to reduce that significantly. Yes, by not operating the assets in Mossel Bay, we do incur lesser costs to be spent, but in the same token, there are other costs that we still incur that we are reducing, example, the insurances on the organization. I think if I can then pause there and hand over to Dr. Pulo, will take us through what I think is the last slide. Thanks, Dr.
Thank you, Mr. Naidu. Honorable members, I think the key takeaways is that as of end of Q3, the group has generated a net loss of 329 million due to the following reason. One, medium-term shutdown of the GTL refinery, which is likely to resume production in May 2022. Inefficient operating model that has a high fixed cost, a theme that will be addressed by the major project, as we alluded earlier on. Unfavorable macroeconomic conditions, depressed external environment due to COVID-19 impact, moreover, the execution of the phase of the turnaround sustenance and the growth initiative, which requires to be implemented urgently. As we move into Q4, our focus will be indeed on the following initiative: one, a major project in the SEFSOC repositioning, the continued efforts on the PetroSA war room, the business development initiative, which talks to another theme of group growth agenda, disciplinary processes to reduce organization corrupt and poor performance, which deals with our theme of governance and oversight, and to intensify our initiatives on the growth part of our business. As you would know, that we had a lazy balance sheet for quite a long time, but we felt that we need now to have some serious initiatives for growing our base and ensuring that our bottom line is improved drastically in the next planning cycle. Thank you very much, Chair. Over to you, Minister.
I think the CE should have probably brought back to me just for summary. And then in Damuza, just one point I wanted to highlight, perhaps there's nothing additional to the presentation as such, but I just wanted to provide some clarification on the board and some executive appointments, which may not have been advised to the committee. So if I look at the board level, for example, at the AE, our chairman, Chen Lala, resigned at the end of December. And the interim chair is Mr. Madowe, whom I introduced as I was doing the introduction, but I went through it very quickly. I think that Uche Boya is the interim chair of the board of PetroSA last year. We have a new CEO, Mr. Bizwe from AE. That was a long-standing vacancy which was filled ultimately at the beginning of the month. So he joined us in the stable. And then the CFO of SEF as well at executive level, I think it's important to just highlight that we've had the CFO seconded from the DMRE, Ms. Murabe, who just did the financial presentation. And she was seconded as a result of the suspension of the then CFO, who was then went through the disciplinary process. Obviously, because of that long suspension, we're not able to appoint, and we will only be able to pursue the recruitment process now that the disciplinary process has now been concluded. I just wanted to highlight those appointments so that the committee is not confused about who is here in the room today. And at this point, then I will hand over to the minister. Thank you.
I must hand over to Honorable Zipo and highlight the fact that once you have too many acting positions, you must know that you are having a sense of instability. But I want to leave it at that. It's something that we pay attention to. Once you have too many acting, you are cutting instability. As I said at 12, Honorable Zipo, I would ask to be released. Comrade DG will run on my behalf on rounding up the comments. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Minister. And I'm sure you're at the committee level, we will release you and have a safe journey. Hopefully, you will bring us a better budget tomorrow when the budget is presented by the Minister of Finance. But on that note, thank you very much for being part of it. Can I check any hands from honorable members who would want to make some points with regards to the presentation made? I see the hand of Honorable Mailem. I see the hand of Honorable Mashaule. I see the hand of Honorable Langa. I see the hand of Honorable Malinga. So it's going to be this way.
Honorable Mailem, Honorable Mashaule, Honorable Malinga, and then Honorable Langa, then Honorable Malinga in that line. I will come back when you are done. Hopefully, I will still be holding on. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, I have a couple of questions. The first, well, they all kind of focus really on the new entity, the National Petroleum Company or the National Oil Company, whatever it finally gets named. My first question is, what is being done about rationalization of function and rationalization of positions? So, for example, you've got three boards, you've got three HR departments, you've got three legal departments, three finance departments, et cetera. What is being done about rationalization, and what is the impact going to be on jobs in those entities going forward? Secondly, can we get a little bit more accurate timeline as to what that merger process looks like? When do we expect it to be completed? Then I have some concerns about capital investment, and I'd really like clarity as to what major capital projects CEF and its subsidiaries are investing in the short to medium term. There's been some talk from various sources about purchasing the SAPREF refinery, for example. There's been a mention by Minister Mbalula, and I raised this last week, about the development of a regasification plant at the port of Nucha. Now, I don't see that in the plans, and I'd really like to know, is this on the cards or not? And if it's not, will the department and the minister come out and say, this is something that we are not doing? Because at the moment, it's standing there unchallenged. I'd also like to know, and this is where things get a little bit murky for me. So we have PetroSA, SFF, and IGAS merging to form the new National Petroleum Company or the new National Oil Company. And we have PASA standing off on its own, regulating and promoting exploration in upstream petroleum. Now, surely it would make sense to include PASA into that National Petroleum Company and move the regulatory function across to NERSA. And I really don't understand why there is a reluctance to consider this. So I'd really like some clarity in that regard. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Greetings to CEF Chair, CEO, and SFF CEO, and Petroleum CEO, and the CFOs. Let me start with the simplest question. It appears that the refinery in PetroSA requires about 1.2 billion to refurbish. And if that was to be the case, or is the case, let's say hypothetically we give you gas and condensate tomorrow. My idea is that you won't be able to process it. How are we planning to fix that that situation, the refiners, given the fact we don't have that 1.2 billion, and we are saying, if I got you correct, around March or May, you plan to be functioning very well. I don't see that happening. Can we get something said around that, please? The second question is on CEF Group financial crisis. The group's income has always been badly affected by the financial crisis in PetroSA. Doesn't CEF have other entities that are generating enough profits to offset this PetroSA's financial crisis? at the moment. Don't you have that? So that when we discuss the self-financials, we get to a point where PetroSA's situation is not cited repeatedly as a problem to the self group itself. The second question, the third question would be on PetroSA's operating costs, which we know now are operating at a loss. And the question would be, without income, who is covering the monthly operational cost of PetroSA? And can we be told that whether this is sustainable, whoever is covering those operational costs, is it sustainable? And if not, what is the plan? The fourth question is on the loss of PetroSA. Why was it allowed to make about 825 million loss? And why was this loss not checked earlier by either SEF or PetroSA or both? Why did we allow this to happen and why didn't we check this anomaly? The last question, which is probably the fifth question, we sat in the meeting a year ago and spoke about the restructuring plans of SEF Group to merge PetroSA, SFF, and I guess it's probably the same question that Honorable Malem asked. That strategy was presented in the meeting. Why has it not happened? Why is the merger taking too long? I mean, to merge three entities, why is it taking too long? Can we be taken through on what is the problem, the real problem, and not other issues? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and greetings everyone again. We welcome the commitment by the minister to not sell off PetroSA and safeguard it. We witnessed a strategic state assets being unbundled and sold off. So we hope we won't hear something contrary in a different platform. On the merge of CF, SFF, IGAS and PetroSA, the minister said we are on track and moving lower, also said moving lower than expected. So which is which, Madala? Oh, sorry, which is which, the minister? And secondly, I think Honorable Mashaul and Honorable Mailem touched on this one as well. How far is the merger of the entities from completion? And what are the set targets for end of 2022? Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Again, greetings. Let me thank the Chairperson of the SEF Group for the introduction of the new voices we had on this platform that we are not familiar with as the Portfolio Committee. We really appreciate that. Ulanga vali video ya kipela mani. Mpege ye nangu, honorable lama. Chair, let me start with the slide presented by the CEO on the SWOT analysis. When he was the CEO, I think, was presenting on their issues, that how do they intend as the group to improve that slide, especially the weaknesses, they are very worrisome. Chairperson, also on strategic fuel fund storage capacity. Trade in the international oil market is denominated into dollars. This means that the purchase of crude oil is determined by the value of rand relative to the dollars. In instances where the value of the rand is lower relative to the dollar, purchasing crude oil becomes too expensive for the SEP group. Why does SFF struggle to keep refined product stocks when South Africa is importing? Again, Chair, on strategic fuel funds. Tank one at Saldanha. Okay. Astron has put SFF on notice that it will no longer be leasing tank one at Saldanha. How true is this? What is the impact of this on SFF's financial sustainability? On the net loss, Chair, SEF Group is expected to generate average net loss in 2022 through to 2024. One of the cited reasons for this is the escalating operating costs. Ironically, SEF Group intends to attract private sector partnerships in some of its projects. How will SEF Group manage to attract private sector investment when it has an uncertain revenue stream? What is the plan to increase their revenue? Lastly, Chairperson, on generating profits. SEF Group says they are going to generate profits post-2024. However, the projected profits are based on anticipations. Are there any tangible profit-making plans that are not based on anticipations? Can the committee be provided with such? Thank you very much, Chair.
Recording stopped.
Chairman,
recording in progress.
Chair.
Okay, thank you very much, honorable members. Before I speak to allow SEF to respond through you, DG, let me just alert members also that in the program we adopted, and I'm not sure, maybe we may have to take that into consideration towards the tail end of the meeting. There is a scheduled meeting on the audit outcomes of those three entities that could not present, including the AG, which is also, if I'm not mistaken, is the precious metal, is the diamond and precious metal regulator, and Nexa and SEF. I just wanted to bring to members' attention on that too. In particular, SEF is still expected to make the presentation to the committee on the merger of the three entities. How far is that process? It's scheduled in our program that we adopted. I'm not there for them now. They can provide the responses as requested by members. Honorable DG and the chairperson of SEF and the team, you can respond.
Greetings, Chair, and greetings to the honorable members. We would like to hand over to the CEOs to respond, then the chair of SEF and also the chairs of different subsidiaries. If they want to add before the chair of SEF, then they can do that. But the technocrats can respond to the questions. Then after they have responded, we would then start with the chair of PetroSA, to be followed by the chair of AE, and also the chair of SFF. And so they will follow in that order. Over to you, CEOs. Starting with SEF Group CEO.
Thank you, DG. Thank you, honorable members. On a few issues that are direct to SEF, I would start with that. and then hand over to my colleagues. One, with regards to the merger, we are requesting that this matter, as is scheduled, that we come back on this. Safe to state that Cabinet did request us to do some work on the merger, which we have done. We are in a process now of getting a slot basically to report on those issues that the Cabinet requested us to present. The work is done. I can safely state that, and we are therefore waiting to take that process forward. We are envisaging that in this before the end of this financial year, we should have made quite progress in terms of the incorporation of that merger, should our report be acceptable at Cabinet. Thank you. And on issues of profitability, maybe let me try and exhaust the Honorable Million's question. It was rationalization. Part of the model, Honorable Councillor, is that at the center of it, we are looking at deriving around 1.5 billion rand as a result of rationalization with that shared services model. Of course, we are anticipating about a possibility of about 10% of the staff could be accessing that. So it's a question of how best to deal with that, either of redirecting staff, and we are trying all we can to avoid the aspect of job losses in that regard. But the shared services model indeed has value in it, and we are seeing about 1.5 billion net improvement as a result of such rationalization. In terms of the investments, the LNG question you raised, the SFF will respond on that. Other acquisition, Honorable Mayland, we are engaged on a number of projects. Like we said, that our strategy talks to issues of growth, and it's not only limited to that one that you mentioned. There are a number of them. Our limitation, though, is that we have signed a number of non-disclosures with a number of entities in that regard. So we are constrained in some. Safe to state that we have been on a drive on acquisition. I can state those that we have concluded and are a matter of public interest, i.e. the Aqua Redstone, where we've acquired about 25% stake there. The issue of the projects that we are undertaking, i.e. the one that you know, the Romco projects, for an example, the 50% acquisition of the BP terminal in the Western Cape. So overall, including the ones that you are asking, we are engaging with a number of sellers on different aspects of some of the assets that are being disposed. We are just constrained with our arrangement as we continue to negotiate. On the question of PASA, I think I will hand that one to the department in terms of its relocation. Honorable Malinga, on the SWOT analysis, on the weakness, one central issue there, Honorable Malinga, is the fact that we are a single source entity. And hence, in terms of our drives, is that we are diversifying as much as possible so that we are able basically to manage the risk that we have. For example, AE, our single source would be Eskom, it would be Petrus A as well. When you look at it, it's SOEs where we're supplying, but it's to increase the number of SOEs that we are supplying. The I guess it's indeed the Romco pipeline, which really talks to the feeder from Mozambique. So it's how do we then increase the offtake even on that one. So it's more an aspect of diversification so that we are able to absorb some of the risk as market movement and dynamics take place. In terms of the private ownership, when you look at our losses, like the CFO has said earlier on, it's not consumption based, it's investment that we are making on new projects. What has been happening so far is that we've been getting money from interest of the mandate. Now, what you see there is that you, instead of maximizing on your return, you've got limitation in terms of what you get. So we then, since AI took a decision that the best thing that we need to do is to drive the growth agenda. The problem with the mistakes that we did since around 2007, there have not been really significant projects that we've invested in. Now, the problem is that those that are yielding, which then talks to the next question as to other portfolios that are doing well, i.e. SFF, i.e. IGES, those, when you look at the investment a cycle in terms of the return, we're looking at 5 to about 7 years before you start to realize some form of return. So we have actually wasted time. So we saw, we deemed it prudent that we rather invest now so that in the next 3 to 5 years, we begin to realize some of those returns. And in the investments that we have been doing, we have been partnering with private sector. Like we say that we are quite an attractive fit to private sector owned partnerships in that regard. I think on the staff side, I have tried to exhaust. If there's something I've left, I will come back. Can I hand over to Petrus A to cover the issues on Petrus A and then SFF and then the DG with regards to PASA? Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Steve. Chair and honorable members, I'm going to talk to three key points and as raised by the honorable members. The first one is the PetroSA refinery, the refinery down in Mossel Bay, and what I want to talk to is the offshore and onshore. If we receive feedstock tomorrow, I'd like to talk to two items, either liquids feedstock, and I know the honorable member mentioned gas, but if we receive liquids feedstock tomorrow, obviously subject to the funding thereof, we will get that refinery back within 12 to 18 months. The reason I say 12 to 18 months is because we need to get the FA, the offshore assets fixed and reinstated. And then we need...
Apologies to the... Okay,
let me try again, Chair and members. I hope that the audio is a bit better, and I'll try to speak a bit slower as well. The first point to the PetroSA refinery reinstatement down in Mossel Bay. Should we receive liquids feedstock tomorrow? Subject to the funding thereof, it will take us approximately 12 to 18 months from the offshore to the onshore infrastructure, from the gas loop to the refinery itself, to get it reinstated, to get it fixed, reinstated, and ready for operation. The shortest duration on the condensate operation is the 12 month, longest duration is the 18 months. But that is, of course, a ramp up from the 1x1 to the 2x2 to the 3x3. Should it be gas feedstock, and of course the funding thereof, it's an additional 6 months to get the facility reinstated. And again, we talk about a ramp up from a 1x1 to a 2x2 to a 3x3 over that period of time. To the second point regarding the financials or the operating costs. Currently, if you see, and I can share with you, as of 31st of January, our intended budgeted revenue was in the order of 9 billion, but our actual revenue was in the order of 11 billion. So there is significant revenue into the company. That revenue is being generated through the downstream business, largely through importation of finished product, and then the trading, sales, and marketing of that finished product into the Republic of South Africa. That revenue, together with other funding mechanisms, for example, I mentioned earlier, the other sources of revenue is utilizing the PetroSA Ghana assets for dividends, utilizing the PetroSA Europe assets for dividends, together with a huge cost management, cost optimization exercise, where we are saving costs on both variable, fixed, and operating costs. That funding in itself is what is used to to run the business currently. So it is being done by PetroSA. We have had support from within the CEF group on the interventions over the last financial year, from whether it's funding interventions or interventions of feedstock through our colleagues at SFF, that has allowed us to remunerate all the PetroSA fixed manpower to date. Yes, it is a challenge. We don't want to say we're out the woods. It certainly is a challenge, but we continue to address it on a month-to-month basis. And as soon as we can get going on the interventions and the interventions are completed, then it will become much more sustainable in the future. With regards to the loss, it is by no means that we did not anticipate the loss. We did huge introspection, and what I want to refer to not only as PetroSA but as the CEF group. And the truth is that had we not invested and implemented the cost management, cost optimization, cash flow management processes, then the anticipated loss, not only the budgeted loss, but the actual loss would have been significantly more. Have we managed to reduce the loss to zero and turn over to profit as yet? No, but we've significantly managed to reduce the losses from where it was the previous financial year to where it ended March 2021 and where it's expected to end March 2022. But we hope that that the interventions that we've identified and the funding that we will source for those interventions internally within the CEF group and externally will then alleviate and turn those losses to zero and then into a positive profit margin going forward. Chair, honourable members, I think I've addressed all the PetroSA questions at this moment in time. So let me, if it's all right, hand over to Mr. Mwaki, the CEO of SFF. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Sorry, Mr. Mwaki, just a quick one that I just would like to add. Honourable members.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, CEO. Thank you, Chair. Maybe just three questions, I think, directed at SFF. Honorable Malin, the issue around Kuha, you know, I think the minister pronounced on this a while back in terms of development of LNG hub in Kuha. That exercise has begun, and SFF actually is in the process of dealing with the regulatory requirements to be able to develop that you know, LNG terminal in Kuha. You know, at this stage, we do not have massive plans in terms of investment. What we've got is the cost of the studies, because as we go through this regulatory compliance, we will do some studies as well. After that, we're going to deal with the feasibility, because the pre-feasibility is done. And only after that can we then begin to look at project investment, which will need all the necessary approvals, like the board, the group approval, and the minister for Section 54. So I think it's pretty early to actually talk about the level of investment. We're still doing the studies at this stage. We have not signed a supply agreement, and we have not entered into the offtake agreement. You know, as I said, and we are not there yet. What you may have seen is CEF has also embarked on directing the activities with other sister state-owned companies like CDC and Transnet, you know, and you may see some, you know, advert from CEF regarding the aggregators, and actually that works across the group, of course, with direction from SEF. I hope I have dealt with that question. Honorable Malinga, the question around storage of finished products, we actually are very much awake to the fact that we need to move into finished product. If you look at our corporate plan and our strategies, we're focusing on that as well. CEO earlier on spoke about our acquisition of 50% of the Cape Town BP terminal to be able to supply Eskom. And we're looking at LPG infrastructure as well. So we are very much pushing hard to get into finished products. But the reality is, I mean, we don't have a lot of refineries now. So even if we keep crude oil, if we hit crash, we're going to struggle to refine it. Tangguan, it is true. Astron has given us not Tangguan to go to our competitor. And at this stage, we're looking at other possible customers that we can bring on board to actually be able to occupy that space. I mean, losing one customer, obviously, especially a key customer, will have impact on our financials, and hence we tend to look harder at who else can come in and also focus on making sure that, you know, we manage our cost base. But I mean, in terms of sustainability, we're pretty much confident that SFF is very much sustainable with strong cash, and the business will not collapse, but you can also sit back. We have to find customers. Thank you, Chair. I hope I've covered the questions which were directed from honorable members to SFF. Thank you.
Thank you very much, CEOs. We will start with
thank you very much, CEO.
Chair of SFF to be followed by the Chair of FFSA. Lastly, Chair of SFF. SFF Chair?
Yes, thank you very much, DG. I think I jumped the gun over there. Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee, honorable members, and also the DG and his team, Chair of SFF, of CEF, Group CEO, CEO of Petro SA, CEO of SFF. Good afternoon. Basically, I think most of the issues that I was going to raise were the issues that you have on our corporate plan, which includes, among other things, as the CE has already covered it, the diversification of our income stream by also getting involved in finished products and the engagements that we are having with various stakeholders in this regard. We are also looking at acquisition of other storage facilities in order to make sure then that we fulfill the mandate of the Department of Energy of the security of energy supply. Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Boyer, unmute, sir. You are muted.
Oh, thank you, Chair. Thank you, honorable members, chairpersons of subsidiaries of SEF and CEOs. Chair, we obviously have noted the comments that were made by members, specifically around how we can improve the Petro SA performance. And to that end, as the board of Petro SA, working with management, we have put a lot of initiatives in place to see how we can improve the financial sustainability or viability of Petro SA, as outlined by the CEO, including the cost-cutting measures. But what's critical is for us to be able to get funding, specifically for the refinery, so that the refinery can then operate in terms of the timelines that were outlined by the CEO, Pragasi. But funding is really critical and key in us getting the refinery to run and operate again. And I think that's the biggest challenge that we have. And we will outline it in our corporate plan that we will submit to the SEF group and ultimately to Parliament. And that's probably one of the challenges that we have, that we are dealing with as a board to see what options we can put in place to restart up the refinery, but also get funding for the refinery in Mossel Bay. Thank you very much, Chair and Honourable Member.
Yes, Sub-Chair.
Thank you very much, DJ, for handing back to me. I think I don't really have much more to add, except to say that the executives really have covered most of the questions that have been asked, and I trust that it has been adequate. But perhaps to just give the committee an additional assurance that from a board point of view, we are really working together as a team. We have a number of board collaborative efforts that we are implementing to make sure that we strengthen on our oversight role. If I speak to the merger, for example, we've got a merger steering committee, which actually is comprised of the executives from the merging companies and also from CEF, and also some board members who do attend it to look at the matters around the merger. And of course, we will share the details when we do come to the committee to speak to the update on the merger. And then the tripartite war room, which meets on a weekly basis to really look at the Petro-SA issues. We have found that it's creating a sense of urgency, it's supporting Petro-SA in terms of focusing them on their initiatives to help themselves to recover. But also, we have an opportunity to leverage our strengths across the business by engaging and enlisting support of the other subsidiaries that are in a better position to support and assist in these endeavors. And then the last point I wanted to just share as well, as part of the oversight role that we play, is that we do have a chairman's forum, which meets on a quarterly basis, which I chair. So I sit with the subsidiary chairs so that we can also look at other matters that have to do with the whole group and how we can leverage off each other's strengths in order for us to fulfill our obligations. I would like to end it at that point, DG, and hand back to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chair. I will deal with only two issues. I think you have done justice to the questions that have been raised by the honorable members. On the issue of PASA, we would like to report or to respond to the committee in the following order. As you are aware that we are currently busy with the repurposing and rationalization of the state-owned entities. Now, we are looking holistically at all the entities within the DMRP stable. At the right time, we will come back to the committee to give a presentation in terms of progress around the repurposing and regionalization of the state-owned entities within the DMRB state. That's how I'll respond to this question. The question on the acting, I think the issue on the acting, the minister has dealt with this point. We will make sure that as per the commitment by the minister, that we attend to all the issues pertaining to the stabilization in regard with the filling of those vacant posts within the group itself. As you know that there is actually a proven positive track record based on the commitments that the minister made previously around the filling of vacant posts. Now, Chair and honorable members and the colleagues in the call, I would like to also to conclude by making a commitment, as the chair of CF has highlighted, that there is actually a lot of work that has been done. In regard with other issues, we will come back to the committee to give a progress update as and when, you know, a need arises in regard with those issues. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, DG, and your team, led by the staff chair. I'm not sure Honorable Mylam is with
your old hand or a new one again. But before I check for other hands, let me say this. I looked at the program. Next week, we are dealing with the AG, the audit outcomes of the three entities. And my only worry, and I must say to honorable members now, and I don't think it's a problem of SEF, is that we have not heard from the AG with regard to the audit outcomes of SEF. I'm informed that SEF, the audit outcomes of SEF have not been tabled in Parliament, which makes it a little bit difficult. But we will check where the problem is. DG, whether it's still held up by the AG or is it delayed in the corridors of DMRE, we will have to check, and I will be advised by the staff also on how do we handle that part. The second thing is what you say, DG. I hope when, for me, I was going to say, members, they are correct. The difficulty for this committee will be to wait endlessly. Now, I don't think you are helping the committee, especially the chair, that at the appropriate time. Now, the problem with the appropriate time is a subjective term. And this is a process that, amongst others, should or would have been finalized in a year, almost a year ago. So my take is that, please, maybe next week when we meet, try and bring something that says on the areas where there has been a principal agreement to go for measures, how far it is, and what are the bottlenecks or challenges, so that at least the committee can see and have a feel that there is some progress or some work that is being done. I don't want to go to a technical challenge that we might have in the near future. And I think it's a matter that when we get that information as a committee, we must be able to deliberate on. I don't think we will be doing justice to just say, oh, okay, we will wait for the appropriate time. From where I sit, a committee of parliament has got a duty to ensure that it performs its duties of oversight. So I will just request, if members agree, just even if it's a one or two pager that outlines even intentions to match even other entities beyond the ones that were presented. Then we can deal, if members agree, that we will put holistically. We must also be aware that the department, when we're dealing with the first, second, and third quarter reports, if I'm not mistaken, there were issues that were not provided in detail. And we said they must be able to go back because they were also impacting on other entities of the department. We still have to find a way even there, how and when do we arrange for such a meeting? Maybe when I go back, if the members agree, we may have to convene even extra classes in the first quarter in order to finalize those work responses. But I don't want to close members out. As I was saying, that next week we are dealing with this, I will get guidance with regards to the non-tabling of the self-audit outcomes. But is there any member who would want to maybe make a point on any of the issues that were raised, or would want to give some package to the department and the entities that were presenting today? I see the hand of Honorable Malinga. Is there any other hands? Okay, Honorable Malinga.
Thank you so much, Jefferson. Apologies, maybe it was my network, but I did not hear the answer on my second question on the financial sustainability of SFF. given the fact that Astron is going to stop leasing a tank in Saldanha Bay. I'm not sure whether I got lost there. I did not hear the response, if I may be responded to, Chair. Thank you.
Okay. I hope members, they say silent means consent. Your silence agrees that this matter must be pursued holistically, including when we deal with the audit outcomes of the three entities, of which two of them are the ones that we're dealing with them today. Do you want to respond to that, SFM?
Do you want to respond to that, SFM?
Thank you, Chair. I will. I tried to deal with that earlier on. Honourable Member, as I said, it is true that Astron has given us notice to leave our facility by June, and which will have only one for one quarter. SFF is still very much sustainable. I mean, we actually look at our business plan, and we should be able to manage ourselves within the cost base and the revenue. But I think it's also worth mentioning that the new acquisitions, like the Cape Town Montague Garden acquisition, LPG, those downstream acquisitions are bringing revenue. So we're moving away from just being a Saldanha Tank One business to a much more revenue diversified business. And that's the agenda driving forward. Thank you very much, Chair. Hope that deals with the question.
Okay, I hope since Valencia, your hand is the old one. Can we then agree that this matter, just add in your presentation tomorrow the process of the matter. Two, let me say also the difficulty that one has is that there are many challenges that I think all of us are required to respond to. I'm still waiting, but I was informed that when we were in Mossel Bay, we were followed, I'm told. I've not seen it, but I got a call that there was a correspondence coming from a community structure or whatever forum. So I'm not sure then how far we will resolve, especially matters that relate to PetroSA. They seem to be a magnitude. But I'm sure all of us, we will appreciate that a solution in the final analysis has to be found. And it can't be found by anyone who are outside. It must be found by the entities itself and its leadership, all of those entities, by the Department of Mineral Resources and Energy, but also by members of parliament responsible in ensuring that they conduct oversight. Oversight is not always an antagonistic one. It must always be based on opinions. And collectively, those opinions must work towards finding a solution. And I hope even when we are faced with such challenges as this committee and the entities and the department, we will continue to appreciate individual and collective structural opinions that are presented. On that note, any final words, DG?
Thank you very much, Your Excellency, the Honorable Chair, and honorable members of the Portfolio Committee. We have taken note of all the issues, the comments that you have made. We'll be able to provide you with the responses in regard with those issues that have been raised. I think without clarifying the question that you have raised, Chair, I think it would be appropriate for us to wait for next week so that we can be able to deal with all those issues. Thank you very much, Chair.
Now, I thought you were going to clarify the issue of tabling, especially of SAF. At least you should know as a DG
Yes, no, definitely, Chair. We are still waiting for the report from the AG. As you know, that it will then follow the internal processes in terms of their approval, also up until the minister. And so we haven't as yet received any report from the AG. And so we'll make a follow-up with the AG as well to get a sense of when this report will be available. Thank you very much, Chair.
Okay, thank you, DG. On that note, honorable members, as I said, that we will have to sit down because one of the things now that is going to complicate our work is that we are going for the budgets and the APPs of the department and the entities post the budget speech of tomorrow. So in that regard, it means we will have to find a way. We can't talk about budgeting on top of something that we have not received the proper information. I don't want to say a proper accountability, but a proper information. So we will have to find a way. As I said, the staff will advise me. Can you please, with your indulgence, I'm now understanding that I was not the only one. All of the complement of the committee in terms of the administration suffered the same fate as me. They were in and out of the meeting. I hope they collected. Can we postpone the minutes, honorable members, with your agreement to next week so that we can also deal with matters arising that relate to the decisions of last week, which means we will do two sets of minutes, the ones of last week and then the ones of today. Is that, can honorable members, can we agree on that and looking at time?
Agreed, Chair.
Agreed.
Thank you very much, honorable members. Please accept my apologies. I didn't know that I was going to have this huge challenge. And thank you, honorable Mashaule, for standing in. Thank you very much and the patience of honorable members. Thank you, DG, and on behalf of the minister, to the minister and to the staff, leadership led by the chairperson as well as the Nexa. Thank you very much. The meeting stands at 10.
Thank you, Chair.
Matam to Cape Town. You must come to